Good evening, welcome to tonight's meeting of Dufferin City Council for Tuesday, July 6, 2021. Time is 7:04 p.m. here in Town Hall. If we'd all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The clerk would please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Cologne.
Present.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith.
Present.
Ms. Negron.
Presente.
Mr. Rattle.
Present.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Mr. Waldron.
Present. It's nice to have everyone back in the room this evening. This is our first meeting in well over a year. We've had so many people in this room. It's been a lonely year for Mr. Bodoni and sitting here, so it's nice to have some company back in the room. We also are still going to continue with our public comment option over the phone if anyone would like to do that when we get to that point in the agenda. So I'm just letting that be known. Prior to the start of our meeting this evening, we have a few citations honoring some retirees from the city of Bethlehem. And a few of them are with us this evening in the room. And wanted to draw attention to them and their families and the dedication that they've served the city over their many years of service. The first is Court Fenstermaker. If you want to come down, I have a short citation I'll read, and then if you want to give any remarks at the lectern, you're welcome to do that. Whereas the residents of the city of Bethlehem have been served by a dedicated, diligent, and talented member of the Bethlehem Police Department for more than 21 years, and whereas Court Fenstermaker, who started with the police department in 2000 and retired in 2021, has during the course of his employment provided the utmost and reliable and outstanding service to the police department and the residents of the city of Bethlehem, now therefore be it resolved that by the City Council of Bethlehem, Court Fenstermaker, be extended the gratitude of the city of Bethlehem, which has benefited from more than two decades of service and the special contributions he made promoting public safety and protecting the lives and property of Bethlehem residents. Be it further resolved, now that Court is retired, he can relax and enjoy all that life has to offer him. And be it further resolved, Court be extended every good wish for a long and satisfying retirement. Thank you, sir. Continuing on, David Horvath, thank you, sir, for joining us. Whereas the residents of the city of Bethlehem have been served by a dedicated, diligent, and talented member of the Bethlehem Police Department for more than 21 years, and whereas David Horvath, who started with the police department in 2000 and retired in 2021, during his course of employment provided the utmost and reliable and outstanding service to the police department and the residents of the city of Bethlehem, now therefore be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that David Horvath be extended the gratitude of the city of Bethlehem, which has benefited from more than two decades of service and the special contribution he has made by promoting public safety and protecting the lives and property of Bethlehem residents. Be therefore resolved that David is retired, he can relax and enjoy that all life has to offer. Be it further resolved that David be extended every good wish for a long and satisfying retirement. Thank you, sir. Now for all that everyone's been waiting for, Pat Andrews. It's been a long wait, I would say. Whereas the residents of the city of Bethlehem have been served by a dedicated, diligent, and talented member of the Bethlehem Police Department for more than 48 years. We're gonna make a little correction there. Pat Andrews, who started with the police department in 1973 and retired in 2021, has during the course of her employment provided the utmost and reliable and outstanding service to the police department and the residents of the city of Bethlehem. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City Council of Bethlehem that Pat Andrews be extended the gratitude of the city of Bethlehem, who has benefited from more than 44 decades of service and the special contribution she has made to promoting public safety and protecting the lives and the property of the Bethlehem residents. Be it further resolved now that Pat is retired, she can relax and enjoy that life has to offer her. Be it further resolved that Pat be extended every good wish for a long and satisfying retirement. Thank you, Pat.
I just want to say that I enjoyed and honored to be with the Bethlehem Police Department for 48 years. I enjoyed coming to work every day, believe it or not, and even up to my very last day, I'm still glad to be there doing my job. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And before we continue on with our meeting this evening, I'd like to take a moment of silence. The police department lost someone that was very close to them, an officer, Matt Ragusa. He left a mark on many of the people who served with him and obviously his family. He'll be extremely missed. Before the meeting, I had a chance to talk to the chief, who isn't with us right at this moment. She had a family obligation, but she'll be joining us pretty shortly. And she's going to be making a formal announcement and press release tomorrow to talk about Matt and his legacy and all that he did for not only his country and his service to the United States Marine Corps, but in his 6 years in Bethlehem as one of her top field training officers. He'll be surely missed by not only the Bethlehem Police Department, but all of the city of Bethlehem. And most importantly, his family. So at this point, I'd like to take a moment of silence in remembering him. Thank you all. As we continue on with our meeting this evening, we will be seeking approval of the minutes from May 19th. If there are no comments from members of council, those minutes will stand approved. Continuing on to public's comment. Old habits here. I asked Mr. Bedoni to get the public sign-up sheet that's in the hallway. We had no names previously signed up, but after public comment occurs for folks in the room who'd like to make comment. I'll open up the phone line, which is the same number that we've been using, 610-997-7963. If anyone would like to make comment on any subject on tonight's agenda or otherwise. And we have two names signed up for first comment, Patricia Fernandez. And if you'd like to step up and give your name and address to the record and proceed with your comment to council with a 5-minute time limit, please.
Sure. I'm Patricia Fernandez. I live at 621 West Market Street in Bethlehem, West Side. I want to speak about the community pools. I've been all over the paper. We're hearing about it all the time on the news. I understand there are factors in play that make this year unique. I'm not asking for, well, I am asking. I'm asking you not to get distracted by this unprecedented year. A lot of decisions have been made about pools this year. They're not different. They're the same issues that have come up year after year. City's been consistently challenged with the management of the community pools. Hearing a pool might be closed for a season or converted into something else isn't new. Hearing there are issues recruiting and training and hiring lifeguards, that's not new either. Hearing the community pools need work and money for repairs isn't new. And the pools are underutilized. Attendance is down. Again, nothing new. And we've had heat waves before, so that's not new. What is new is all our pool resources have been thrown into a mega pool in a semi-residential neighborhood, which happens to be a city hub, and it effectively closed our west side pool. And so what happens now? At this point, our choices are limited. Families who have the resources and time to go and buy season pass early and have a family member who can be home during the day and drives and has a car to transport the kids and other family members to the big pool get to go in early. And if you're not privileged in that way, you get a single day pass after the priority group is allowed in. And if there's room, and I have to wonder how many families are going to take that risk to get everybody together and go to see if there's room. After, you know, the people with the season passes and the biggest SUVs come. I have to wonder about that. Bethlehem, our walkable city, isn't as walkable as it used to be. So a few things. Again, it's not new. The West Side Pool has been a crapshoot for a long time. Will it open? Will it not? You walk along our street on Market Street and people are talking about it. What day will it open? How long will it be open? Will it be open past our music fest? Will it not? Should we bother getting a season pass? What time is it going to be open to? You know, sometimes it closes it a little early. Sometimes it doesn't. You just never know what you're going to expect with it. There's no concessions, so the kids can't stay very long. And then, of course, the kids don't show up. Yep, that'll happen. They get hungry. Parents come at the end of the day. If you've been there late in the afternoon, parents come and they watch outside the gate because why spend money to go in for an hour, sometimes a half hour, sometimes less. So the kids all watch me, watch me, watch me, and their parents are like 15, 20 feet away because they can't get in our pool. I'm not even going to tell you that it's pretty run down. You could use a fresh pool of a fresh coat of paint. And well, I am going to tell you, there's a pot there that's been passed over, turned over for a few years now. Nobody's right-sided it. It needs a little love. So I don't know what to tell you about Memorial Pool. I went to the community information session, and it talked about the development of Memorial Pool, and nothing was mentioned about the other pools, so I asked specifically, well, what about the other community pools? And I was assured there was no plan to change access and care of the community pools, and here we are. So what I'm asking for is a champion, someone on city council who's going to take this on. This isn't a this year issue. We're not just waiting for the end of COVID or people to get over Memorial. This is, decisions are being made which are not equitable. Decisions are being made by the kids that are not here speaking. They have no idea there's a city council meeting. And yet, this is where the decisions are made. So it's not a seasonal problem. We need to share our resources. We need to advertise for jobs. I mean, advertise for pools. You know, we don't advertise the pools. It's all word of mouth. Well, you can get on the website if, you know, the digital divide isn't in the way. We don't set schedules. We need to set schedules. There needs to be recruitment of staff throughout the year. Maybe try a bonus for the kids that last the whole year. I put the time in. Basically run it like a business or find out what other entities do. The last time that happened, Bethlehem bought something. They bought the mega pool. Instead, I wonder if we could really take a look at what would it take to keep our pools open for all our kids. That's just the one with the resources. There's a demand for pools this year. There's an opportunity there. I hope someone's going to champion this. Please champion it. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to make comment on any subject on tonight's agenda? What is the topic?
Development.
Sure. If not right now, I'm going to ask in another minute, so.
Okay.
Now's appropriate. If you just give your name and address for the record.
Yeah, my name is Jerry DiGiulio, 23 East Wall Street. I just want to start with a quote that perfectly sums up my feelings on recent events in Bethlehem. On May 11th, at a meeting of the Community Development Committee, Dr. Van Wert said, "We should not allow the push for development to ruin the very treasure that we have." Exactly my sentiments. She went on to say that she favors smart developments, as do I. and this applies to both sides of the river. Recently, a lot of attention has been paid to two tall buildings proposed on the south side, but here on the north side, we have issues with development as well. Activist Ms. Kim Cottrell Smith said, "Bethlehem's brand is history." She is correct. Anything that detracts from that history makes us less prosperous. When Ed Gallagher, better known as the Gadfly, asked Robert Malosky, chairman of the City Planning Commission, about new construction plan for 548 North New, how does it blend into the neighborhood? Mr. Malosky replied, quote, "In time, other buildings nearby may also be replaced." Aha! Now it fits. I have a picture of these. This is the proposed building. This is the one it's replacing. And everything on the block looks like this. And they say this building will enhance buildings like this, which I think is silly. If you replace the buildings around them, it'll fit in. If you look at these pictures, you can see that's not true. By the same token, if you take out all the buildings in the historic industrial quarter, magically Skyline West will be perfect. On the south side, when all buildings are 90 feet tall, the Benner Building, the Flatiron Building, etc., will fit like a glove. Any new development should look to enhance the look of Bethlehem's neighborhoods, not change them. A recent survey taken by Bethlehem Planning Commission concerning the future of South Side clearly shows what people on both sides of the river care about. We care about preserving historical architecture. We want to preserve our neighborhoods, and we want affordable housing. Developments should be made to fulfill our needs, not bend local government to their interest. Developers keep challenging neighborhood traditions and norms in design and height, aided by the City Council overruling HCC and HARB recommendations. I believe any new ordinance on buildings in the CB zoning district of the South Side should have a maximum height of 60 feet in conformance with HCC guidelines. Otherwise, these conflicts in the face of ever more aggressive developers will never be resolved. In view of the controversial nature of 548 North New Street, Skyline West, the height of the buildings proposed on the South Side, a 14-story luxury apartment at the Boyd Theater site, for which I can find no plans, the fact that historical review boards on each side of the river have recommended against these projects, the fact that the pandemic has restricted public comment, which is already difficult, the fact that these buildings threaten our quest to become a World Heritage Site, the fact that a good portion of the council is about to be replaced, I think it would only be fair to table these projects until a new mayor and city council are seated. That's it.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who would like to make comment on any subject on tonight's agenda? Yes.
This is Louise Dixon from 402 West 9th Street on the south side. And I'm here to say that I agree with the previous speaker when it comes to the developments in the south side. I moved to this town 3-4 years ago because of its beautiful historic nature. If I wanted to move to the south side, which was full of tall buildings, I could have moved to New Rochelle, New York. But I want to see that the historic nature of this town is preserved and the beauty and of the history is preserved. But when I look at the considerations that have been made so far, the Historic Conservation Commission unanimously rejected the project as inappropriate. A building of 9 stories is way taller than what we currently have down there, where Zest is at least 6 stories tall. And to put a 9-story building right across the street from it, further up the hill, would, in my opinion, just really not work. Personally, I have serious concerns with the multiple issues that have emerged from the consideration of this project. But it seems to be that there is a lack of understanding on the council by some members of the Historic Commission of the functioning of the Southside Historic Conservation District vis-a-vis the zoning, as well as the irrelevance of the precedent that the Historic Commission decision-making, which is purposely designed to be highly location-specific. I also noticed that there seem to be no comprehensive review processes for mayoral appointees to authorities, boards, and commissions. I also noticed that there's a single focus push for development with disregard for resident input at every stage. Over the last 8 months, dozens of Southside residents have spoken out against high-rises in our downtown. At two meetings on the Southside zoning study, four historic commission meetings on the Southside New Street project, and the Community Development Committee meeting where the results of the Southside zoning study were presented, and the June 1st City Council meeting. Not a single Southside resident spoke publicly in favor of high-rises in our commercial district, and not a single Southside business owner spoke publicly in favor of high-rises in the commercial district. And I know some who are opposed to them but fear retaliation from city inspectors. So the persistent absence of concrete data to support the arguments in favor of high-rises on the south side and continued reliance on anecdotal evidence. Members of the administration, consultants, and council members in support of these projects have not offered concrete economic data, environmental data, or any south side specific numbers to support these projects. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my comments.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to make comment? Mr. Grubb?
Dana Grubb, 2420 Henderson Place. I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk about what's been the buzz of social media the last few days, and that's fireworks and their impact on the quality of life. In Hanover Township, fireworks are permitted on July 3rd, 4th, and 5th from 4 p.m. to 11 p.m. On December 31st from 4 p.m. to 11:59 p.m. And then on January 1st from 12 midnight to 12:30 a.m. until, from 4 p.m. to 11 p.m. That's it. It's the only time they're permitted in Hanover Township. Bethlehem Township, Memorial Day, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. July 3rd, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. July 4th, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. July 5th, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. Labor Day, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. December 31st, 7 p.m. to 11:59 p.m. January 1st, 12 a.m. to 12:30 a.m. City of Bethlehem, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on any day of the year. You own a dog? You suffer from PTSD? There's an issue with these. The issue started at the state, but the municipalities have the ability to control it a lot more. As elected officials, you need to respond to this issue locally. You also need to press state officials to rescind the legislation that created this explosion of sound that intrudes into the peace and quiet to which all of us are entitled. The solution in Bethlehem isn't doing nothing. It's taking steps to address and restrict it. Municipalities across Pennsylvania have been dealing with this since Harrisburg passed this foolhardy piece of legislation. All it was a money grab. And the problem is twofold: our government of inaction and residents who show no consideration for their friends and neighbors. But it just doesn't stop with legislation. You need enforcement. And when you enforce an ordinance like this, and I'm saying you should look at these and amend what was passed several years ago in Bethlehem, you shouldn't be only citing the perpetrator, because it is difficult to find somebody actually setting them off. Nail the property owner. If somebody's setting fireworks off on property in this city, cite the property owner, whether they've given permission or not. Nail them. And then if you get your hands on the perpetrator, the people who are setting them off, nail them as well. And then publicize in the local newspapers that they've been cited. This is ridiculous. People are complaining everywhere about the impact on animals, about the impact on their neighbors. 2 a.m. in the morning, 3 a.m. in the morning, fireworks going off in people's on private property. The state law requires that you not set them off within 150 feet of an occupied building. Well, that's a joke. The other night, after I photographed the fireworks over at Steel Stacks, I came home. It called the police. Where would they have responded to? Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. They were going off everywhere. You gotta set standards. You gotta enforce ordinances. Because it's only gonna get worse. People are completely irresponsible when it comes to fireworks. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Mr. Italics?
I'd like to put a perspective on the comments on Southside. I didn't intend to speak, but Stephen Antalik, 737 Ridge, 1201 Butstown Road. At the June 1st, 2021 Bethlehem City Council meeting, a council member stated that Southside history was of lesser value than that of the North Side. This comment reflects an attitude that existed toward the South Side for over 100 years, and thereby to its neglect. A brief review of the history of Bethlehem's negligence regarding the South Side over the years might give a satisfactory answer. The mutual distrust and antagonism that existed between the boroughs of Bethlehem and South Bethlehem persisted well after the two boroughs were united in 1917 as the city of Bethlehem. This unholy union began the slow and subtle demise of the once proud and prosperous borough, today known as the South Side. In 1937, the city launched a citywide uniform Christmas lighting scheme in order to reflect the unity and equality of both sides of the river. Today, the socially divisive scheme where the North Side white lights represent the early Moravian community and the South Side multicolored lights represent the early European immigrants. The 1956 plan of the Bethlehem Development Redevelopment Authority was to consolidate city government into Church Street on the city's north side. It became a reality. The second major aspect was to bypass Wyandotte Street traffic, relieving the 5 points of a dangerous intersection by using the defunct Reading Railroad right-of-way, thereby improving the quality of life with the local residents. The South Side plan never saw fruition. It was readdressed in the 1970s as South Side 76, but it also failed. With the loss of occupancy of the police department by the consolidation at the new government complex, the historic Market House at 3rd and Adams Streets was allowed by the city to fall into serious disrepair. It was then sold to a developer who then raised it in order to build a mini strip mall, thereby diminishing the street's historic ambiance. This ambiance was further diminished by adding a gas station at 3rd New Streets. Had Bethlehem a visionary who respected the South Side, this demolished historic site might have been preserved similar to Philadelphia's famous Reading Market. A blatant insult was meted out to the South Side history by a 1980s Bethlehem Tourism Authority single-page city map handed out to the visitors. Of the listed 13 points of interest, all on the north side, with no mention of the south side. Lehigh University's Packard Chapel, the early resident home of the famous Bethlehem Bach Choir, and the Bethlehem steel blast furnace, which gave Bethlehem its international recognition, were ignored. Another discrepancy worth noting is the manner in which Bethlehem historic boundaries are set. On the north side, the boundary streets include both curves. On the south side, Wyandotte Street historic boundary was set in the middle of the street. This enabled a fast food chain to build a very controversial brand outlet, rather than a possible welcome center to visitors to the South Side historic district at the Five Points. There's instead a massive gaudy neon illuminated sign announcing to visitors to the South Side via PA 378 that McDonald's has sold over 100 million hamburgers in the United States. The question of historic preservation versus developer interest was intensely debated at a number of city council meetings. Finally, in 2007, Bethlehem enacted the long overdue Article 1714 in order to establish guidelines for its Southside historic preservation. It then violated its own ordinance by approving plans of a developer to build a nine-story building at 4th and Vine Streets. This violation was confirmed by a lawsuit against the city by the Southside Historic Society in an attempt to prevent it. The city then added insult to injury by its further allowing a six-story building at 3rd and New Streets. On June 1st, Bethlehem City Council then approved the plans for an eight-story building at East 3rd Street, having dismissed the recommendations of its own Historic Commission and also further violated its Article 1714. Should Council approve the current developer plans for another high-rise on South New Street, it will give further confirmation of the premise that the needs of developers are of a higher priority than that of the Southside Historic Preservation. These recent actions appear to support the idea that the early demise of the Southside, which began in 1917, is still alive and well. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who'd like to make comment on any subject not on tonight's agenda? Moving to second public comment on any subject listed on tonight's agenda, any ordinance or resolution that council will be discussing this evening, if anyone would like to make comment on that. At this point, I'll open up the phone line to anyone who would like to make comment to council. The number 610-997-7963. If anyone would like to make comment on any subject, additionally, any resolution or ordinance on tonight's agenda. This will be the last opportunity for public comment this evening at 610-997-7963. Hello, Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, I'd like to make some comments tonight, public comments tonight. May I start?
Yes, you can give your name and address for the record and proceed with your comments to council with a 5-minute time limit.
Great, thank you. My name is Brina Holland. I live at 379 Carver Drive in Bethlehem. And I'd like to make some comments about the new building being proposed on New Street in South Bethlehem. As others have noted, it's very clear that this building is too tall for the historic district, as the Historic Conservation Commission, the HCC, has repeatedly expressed. It's also clear from many comments that it's not serving the needs of the Southside community. The mayor's recent removal of the only woman on the HCC, Commissioner Starbuck, is really shameful and a blatant effort to circumvent the normal review process by experts on historic conservation. Commissioner Starbuck has more experience than anyone else on the Historic Conservation Commission, and she was removed only after she publicly voiced opposition to this proposed project. Even worse, her removal took place between city council votes on the same development project. I do hope you all will not just ignore such highly unethical behavior. Your job is to represent citizens, not the mayor's office, and city council is supposed to be a check and balance on the mayor's power, and I really hope you take this opportunity to do that. Anyone who has attended previous HCC meetings about this project knows that the commissioners repeatedly told the developer that the building needed to come down to 4 or 5 stories in height. While the mayor managed to bully the HCC into approving the project at the last HCC meeting, partly by replacing one opposing voice, the approved project is still higher than what the commissioner clearly indicated in multiple meetings is compliant with historic district standards. In addition to these, what I consider to be highly unethical issues, I'd also like to discuss why this project conflicts with the goals of Bethlehem's new climate action plan, otherwise known as the CAP. Councilman Reynolds proudly states in a letter from City Council at the start of the CAP that the work of implementing it will not be easy. He writes that it will take time, effort, and an obligation to reevaluate and change the framework by which we make decisions on a daily basis. He states that our future success will be determined by our ability to educate, involve, and challenge our community to create a more sustainable city. And so what I want to ask you all is this what you are doing here as you consider approving a building of this size in this location without any commitments to green construction and design or other goals in the CAP? Is this your idea of what it means to create a more sustainable city as this new plan tells you to do? A cursory reading of the CAP suggests that the project is not aligned with it. The idea that increasing density is good because it minimizes the environmental impacts of city residents is really overly simplistic and outdated. Imposing additional density on the south side conflicts with the environmental justice commitments of the CAP, which promise that frontline communities like the south side will not shoulder the burden of other environmental improvements. This is an area of the city that is already burdened by high population density, as well as the lack of green infrastructure, too much traffic, inadequate cooling capacity, etc. The commitment to environmental justice was integrated throughout the CAP to prevent precisely this kind of environmental action that burdens those who have the least. Additionally, Bethlehem's buildings are responsible for more than 70% of the city's community-wide greenhouse gas emissions. And so diminishing emissions from buildings is a really an important part of the city's climate goals. The CAP explicitly states that building owners will need to make investments that increase energy efficiency of new buildings and decrease buildings' fuel carbon intensity. More specifically, the CAP tells us that a project like this one you're considering tonight should have to do several things just related to its goals for the building section alone in the CAP. It tells us that we should require cost-effective energy-saving measures on large buildings to help mitigate the urban heat island effect, right? And as noted in the CAP, Bethlehem's urban heat island effect currently creates the largest temperature increases in frontline communities like the South Side, so it's especially important that this be done in this area of the city where the proposed building is going. The CAP also tells us to encourage existing multi-tenant building owners to sub-meter their buildings to support increased energy conservation. Has this even been discussed and encouraged in the case of this building? How else are you going to negotiate about this metering and do this kind of encouraging except at this moment of when you have an opportunity to get something you want from the developer? You all seem perfectly willing to hold up approval of the zoning changes at the Martin Tower site based on the failure of the developers to address some environmental issues. Please tell me why you won't do the same thing when the environmental concerns are those that matter to Southside residents. The CAP also proposes implementing net zero emissions building standards for new buildings. These standards require buildings to be designed and equipped so that all energy use on an annual basis is highly efficient and comes from renewable energy sources. This is on page 93 of the CAP, in case you want to see how you can accomplish this goal with some simple zoning changes. There are so many ways to relate this kind of development to the CAP that has not been done, and I'm hoping that this CAP is going to be more than a feel-good gimmick. And that you start letting it inform and shape your decisions. I presume that was the intent. When Willie Reynolds came out with his plan for the climate action, it was 2017. That was 4 years ago. And what have we done besides sit around and talk about what we're going to do and wait for to hire somebody else to do it and make the hard choices that you all don't want to make? It's time that you actually start doing something to address climate and stop talking about it. And stop waiting for other people to make the decisions for you. You have the opportunity to do that tonight, to take this seriously, to make some stuff happen before you actually approve this building. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to make comment at 610-997-7963?
I'd like to make a comment.
Sure. Come on down.
Hello, I'm James Patrick Jordan of 742 7th Avenue, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I'm here on behalf of Touchstone Theater, who is on the agenda tonight. And we're looking to get a special use permit exemption for the Parham Park. Why this is in front of you is because we are going to have alcohol at our event. And so, for those familiar, we have Touchstone Theater, and we have a big parking lot out back. And throughout COVID, we've been running socially distanced events, oftentimes with alcohol, including whether from our own permit or with vendors coming in from the outside from local restaurants. and we are going to have another event. And what we figured, what we found out is, well, it's pretty obvious. The Parham Park's right next door, and the trickle over to the park, it's a much easier kind of place to secure on two fronts rather than having to stand on a wall and monitor a great big section. And also, it allows us to spread the audience out more and have it just a much better time and less congested. We've done all these events without incident, and historically, this isn't the first time I've been in front of the council, dating back probably even a decade, to use the park for the same issue. And even then, a long history of not having incidents with this. So I'm just here to advocate on behalf of Touchstone and say, please find it in your divine wisdom to grant us permission for to be able to. In fact, we're not even going to be selling the alcohol in the park. We'll be selling the alcohol on Touchstone's property. It's just the Parham Park's right there, and people want to stand under a shady tree. It makes it a whole lot nicer of an event. Cool. Thanks.
Great. If anyone else at home would like to make comment, producer 610-997-7963. This will be the last opportunity this evening to make comment to council. City Council.
Hi, my name is Al Wirth. I live on the west side on 525 6th Avenue, and I'd like to comment on the proposal relating to the approval of the certificate of appropriateness for the large nine-story building on the south side. Tonight's vote, one of the things I talk about with my students in my classes is that you can never do just one thing, and it's usually considered to be an ecological rule of thumb, but it also applies to politics, and tonight's vote on this certificate of appropriateness is clearly doing much more than one thing. I would note that a certificate of appropriateness is kind of a marvelous term for putting lipstick on a pig, which is what I think this nine-story, completely out of scale and out of character of the Southside neighborhood that is being put in is the description of this building. It's also, there's a bunch of other issues that are related to this, including the fact that we're trying to get a building, a number of buildings, all of which are, I guess, well connected, but not necessarily well designed or well built, getting them approved before anybody, any of the developers have to meet any of the standards, as the previous caller mentioned, to meet the climate action plan and the requirements for building really 21st century buildings. So I'm pretty confident that not only is this building out of scale and out of size and impact for the site where it's being provided for, and of course violating a whole lot of the standards that we established the Historic Commission to report. But it's also an antiquated building before it starts, and that's part of why it's being proposed and built and approved at this time. There's something else going on here, of course, too, which is several of you are aware of. The council is about to turn over, and we will be replacing a number of the existing members who are retiring or moving on to other tasks, and yet we're still having this lame duck council that is currently going to vote on this certificate of appropriateness, and I guess we all know why it's being proposed and what the expected outcome is tonight. But it's not recognizing the future direction that was approved by the voters in the last election. We were replacing the men on the council for the most part with women. We will have the first majority women council in Bethlehem, and we will have a council that is looking forward-looking and trying to implement the climate action plan. But in the meantime, every developer in town looks like they're coming in with every possible way they can break a rule and exploit the public way to promote their building. The other impact that is also attends this building is that it's setting an incredibly terrible precedent of allowing airspace over public land to be able to add almost one-third additional space to the building itself to allow it to have go over Graham Place, and in actually, of course, as many speakers have mentioned in a historic discussion, intrude on the greenway, the public space, the road first, and then the greenway, which are shared by all of us and owned by all of us, and yet this will be claimed for profit-making by the developers. And the real decision that we're making here, and the reason why it's coming before us, and why the Lame Duck Council might, and the Lame Duck Mayor, might want to promote all this, of course, is that there's a lot to be gained by getting exempted from future constraints or being or having a different set of laws than the average Bethlehem citizen has to face. But the rest of us will be now kept anxious by the precedent that is set by this giveaway of airspace. So future developers will come along and say, well, you gave airspace to this developer, so why can't you go ahead and give away airspace to everybody who asks for it? So the big question here is whether we actually have the people who live in the city make the decisions for the city, or whether we have the people who own the property in the city make the decisions that shape the future of our community. That would affect both the climate resilience, the climate response of Bethlehem, the quality of life, the historic preservation, all of the issues that have been raised by many speakers before the Historic Commission and before this council. And of course, we all know that this is, in the famous Bethlehem parlance, done deal. But the fact that a lame duck council will be making all this gives everyone an idea of what the real likelihood of approval of this. And the fact that all the people on the council are calling themselves Democrats, but an awful lot of them are not representing the traditional Democratic constituency, but instead are representing well-heeled developers and well-connected developers, whom the lame duck mayor and the lame duck members of council will be supporting in tonight's vote. So I hate to give one of my standard political science lessons in one sense, but I feel like I continue to be required to do all this, and I urge the council to reconsider any plan to approve this and other projects, because they'll be setting terrible precedents, which won't put us in a 21st century, but rather lock us back in them that's got, and people who know the right people will get to decide what the future of the city looks like. Thank you. Good night.
Last call for public comment at
610-997-7963.
Hi, good evening. This is Anna Smith calling from 631 Bridge Street. So you all know me, and I usually work pretty hard to prepare my remarks, and I usually even practice them to make sure I stay in my five-minute limit. But I'm pretty tired tonight. I'm on vacation at the beach, and I'm still calling in, so this is going to be a little less structured. So I am tired because I've attended 8 meetings, most of them stretching well over 3 hours, where the South Main Street Project was the main topic of discussion, and where dozens of Southside residents of all ages and backgrounds expressed their concerns about a wide variety of issues with this project. This displaces residents and businesses that serve our community. It casts a shadow over our public space on the Greenway. It will most certainly aggravate traffic issues at a critical downtown juncture with already narrow streets and complicated street parking. Takes no environmental considerations into concern with its plans, among a lot of other issues. I've heard many folks speak out who have never spoken at a meeting before. A lot of them. I've heard a lot more express concerns about this project who will probably never attend a meeting and speak out. And I have yet to speak with anyone who lives in our neighborhood who supports this project. And I have yet to hear a single business owner speak publicly in favor of this project, although I've heard that they're out there. I do know a number of business owners who oppose this project, but who fear retaliation from city inspectors if they express their opposition publicly. Whether or not that would actually occur, that's the perception I've heard from a few business owners. And I'm tired because I spent a lot of time thinking about my neighborhood, as you know, and trying to do research on best practices. For mid-sized, cities like Bethlehem, I spent a lot of time looking at neighborhood-level data and thinking about how to best plan for development that enhances our community while ensuring our neighbors don't get left behind. And I'm that eternal optimist who actually thinks that that's the possibility, that we can do better, and that there is an option for balance there. And I try to share that data, that research, for the benefit of our neighborhood. But, watching this tower progress through the historic review process, I realized that, that doesn't seem to be the goal of other folks, pushing this project through. It's not about the neighborhoods or the best practices or the folks who live here. It seems like it's about making this project happen no matter what. And even going so far as to manipulate the checks and balances put in place by previous councils and administrations to ensure that it happens. And it feels like that's why we haven't had any real engagement, why the dozens of residents who've spoken out are faced with public silence and private scorn. And I'm tired because I know you're going to pass this project tonight. I know the impact it will have on our neighborhood. I know that some folks on the south side see this as the last straw, the final blind capitulation to a wealthy Connecticut developer that will be cited as precedent for any and every project moving forward. And I know there are folks thinking about how long we will be able to stay in our neighborhood if this is the future. I'm tired because I know I've already been labeled as one of those people who talks about the same things at council over and over, the ones that folks on council are encouraged by the powers that be to just ignore. Those of us who care so much about our community, we do research for free in our limited spare time, sit through hundreds of hours of meetings without pay, to be ignored in public and, criticized behind the scenes. And it makes me sad, to be honest. I expect better. I hope for better, and I'm convinced we can all do better. And I'm certainly not going to stop doing my research to talk to my neighbors and working toward a truly representative, engaged community. You're stuck with me. So when you think about your decision tonight, I don't know about you, but when I make up my mind about a development project, I have a framework that I kind of use to establish my position. First, I try to learn as much about a project as possible. I read everything the developer presents. I study the blueprints. I calculate the height, the parking spaces, total number of residences, commercial spaces. I think about potential uses for the first floor. Then I look at the location of the proposed development. Is it displacing anyone? Who or what business will be evicted? Does the site have significant potential for another project if this one fails? Does the owner already own the property? They just have an agreement of sale. What impact will the project have on surrounding businesses or residents, on the streetscape, on traffic? How does it fit in with our historic conservation district, which is essentially a zoning overlay? I even came up with my own principles to help guide my evaluation of projects so that my process would be a little more systematic, less based on feeling, more based on concrete data and best practices. All I can say is I hope you've all done the same when you're voting on so consequential a project as you are this evening, and one that's likely to set precedent for years to come when it comes to the South Side. I really look forward to each and every one of you letting us know your reasons for your vote this evening. And I hope that after the dozens of residents who have spoken, the hours that we have committed to reviewing these projects and giving you our thoughts on them, I hope that each one of you will share your thoughts this evening before you make your vote. Thank you for your time. I'm sorry, I'm a little glum this evening. Hopefully next time I'm calling in, it'll be on a happier occasion. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Anyone else like to make comment to council? If you're going to do so, 610-997-7963. Hello, Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, my name is Seth Moblin. I live at 726 Hillside Avenue in South Bethlehem. Like many of my neighbors and colleagues, I'm calling to offer a comment about the proposed nine-story building on New Street. Like some of the others who have spoken tonight, I find myself sort of at a loss for words. There have been so many meetings about this project. And the negative effects of this project on the Southside community have been so extensively and eloquently expressed, both by people with high degree of expertise and by many, many dozens of residents, including many Southside residents who do not ordinarily speak at these meetings, that it's difficult for me to know what more we can say to you. People have eloquently described to you already why a nine-story building is simply incompatible with the guidelines of our historic district on the south side. All of you, I think, are crystal clear about that. The most fundamental guideline in the historic conservation district is that any new buildings need to be consonant in scale with those that already exist. All of you are aware that a nine-story building is not consistent with a neighborhood of 2-, 3-, 4-story buildings. All of you are also aware that there is some policy folly involved in spending city money to create a greenway and then to authorize a building which will permanently cast shadow on one of the few green public spaces in our historic downtown. I think the only thing I can really add tonight, and that I really hope all of you who are going to cast your votes about this building will take seriously, is this. As far as I can tell, the only arguments in favor of authorizing this building are it will increase the tax base, a worthy goal, and some people imagine that having a nine-story luxury apartment building will be good for business on the south side downtown. I, like everyone else who has called, want to improve the city's tax base. And like everybody who has called in tonight or has spoken there about this project, I too am deeply committed to supporting businesses on the south side. The main point I want to make to you is this. If you authorize tonight the building of a grossly out of scale building in the middle of our historic downtown, you are acting against the long-term business and financial health of our city. The reason we have historic conservation districts is that city leaders recognized years ago that historic conservation districts create vibrant cities that attract residents and attract businesses. Sterile cities all over the country would die for the kind of historically distinctive downtown we currently have. It's even at the grossest bottom line economic level just bad policy for us to tear apart, to damage the most precious thing we have in our historic downtown. At present, we still have a downtown from which you can see the hills that surround it. We have a downtown with sunlight. We have a downtown that feels like people built it over generations. If we start willy-nilly authorizing out-of-scale projects of this kind, we are simply throwing away the most precious resource we have in return for nothing. there will be large profits to a particular developer, which is not in the public interest. And I guarantee that years, decades from now, people will look back and they will think, what were city government leaders thinking? How could they possibly have authorized the building of buildings of this kind, which made our downtown look like the kind of shabby, incoherent downtowns with which cities all over the U.S. are now saddled? So before you cast your votes tonight, I just want to ask you, whose interest would such a building truly be in? Yes, it would increase the tax base a little bit, but at long-term cost economically. I also want to remind you all, even during a pandemic, the Planning Commission consulted city residents. The results of the Planning Commission survey are absolutely clear. If you want to know what city residents think about this issue, you have the answer. The great majority of people who answered the survey said, out-of-scale construction, the height of buildings, was a matter of importance to them. If you vote to authorize an out-of-scale building on New Street tonight, you are directly and explicitly saying that what city residents, including the Southside residents who took those surveys, said about their own priorities. I want to thank all of you for your commitment to the city, for your public service, for sitting through these long and often trying meetings. And I just want to ask you, before you cast your votes tonight, ask yourself, would such a building genuinely be in the long-term interest of our city, and above all, to those of us who live and who work and who actually own businesses on the South Side? Or are you in danger of putting the profits of a single developer into the balance and regarding that as having more weight than the concerns of the rest of us? Thank you very much for your time tonight and for listening to our comments.
Thank you for your comments. If anyone else would like to make comment, the number to do so is 610-997-7963. Communications, Communication 6A.
A memorandum from Edward J. Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Huey Engineering, Inc. for services.
Sir.
Mr. Antalis?
Was that the second or first public comment section?
That was second comment. Would you like to make comment?
I made a comment on the first.
Would you like to make a comment?
On the second, yes.
Go ahead, sir.
I didn't hear the announcement.
The comments made by the Stephen and Talks again. The comments made by the callers are 100% accurate. And my question is this: why does the city have ordinance 1714? What's its purpose? Its purpose delineates what the callers in have said. It's in direct contradiction. It's what's happening in real life. So why the discrepancy? I have a balance here. Historic preservation and private development money. It's way out of scale. It's the domino effect, which started with the approval of a 9-story building at Fourth and Vine. Oh, we did that. Let's do this one because it's like that. So like that becomes like that. So we have a nine-story building there, eight-story here, nine-story there. It's a violation of the will of the South Side. I suggest you repeal 1714. Because you're violating your own oath of office by violating your own ordinance. So either reject this or repeal 1714. You have a choice to make. This is almost beyond common sense or good government. I'm at a loss, I really am. And if that is approved, I will leave this meeting confounded. Totally confounded.
Communications?
Mr. President.
Sorry. Oh, Mr. Shire.
Thank you. A little bit slow tonight. I twisted my knee. Oh, I love that
year. And I apologize a bit for my appearance. I haven't quite concluded that the pandemic is over. One advantage of speaking later is that you don't have to repeat what's already been said, and said very well by Kim and Seth and Stephen. But I'd like to add one additional point. I was thinking today again about the fact that the developer, hopefully it's still true, is going to save the facade of the one contributing building. And that's a tip of the hat to history. But it occurred to me, it's some ironic symbolism, because when you look at the whole front of the new building, the symbolism is that the history has been overwhelmed and dominated by the new and the big and the massive and the more. And so history and the associated tourism, and but believe me, there is some tourism to the South Side, not just the North Side, but the South Side as well. And the domination of the old and the smaller and the human scale. Thank you.
Communication 6A.
A memorandum from Edward J. Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Huey Engineering, Inc., for services related to preparation of the wastewater treatment plant control building space configuration conceptual plan. The agreement runs through December 31st, 2021. The cost is $17,000 and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6B.
A memorandum from Edward J. Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Colliers Engineering and Design, Inc. for services related to preparation of a graphical information system needs assessment and asset management plan. The agreement runs to December 31st, 2021. The cost is $8,700. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6C.
A memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached proposed resolution instituting the special event parking zone for Music Fest 2021.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution authorizing execution of a lease agreement between the City and ECTB Holdings LLC for the use of three Upper Saucon fields for baseball.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda. Communication 6E.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. The permittee is Touchstone Theater and the agreement covers Parham Park on August 6, 2021 in connection with the Touchstone Theater First Friday Concert.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution authorizing execution of an amendment to a tower lease agreement between the City and Allentown SMSA Limited Partnership, doing business as Verizon Wireless. The amendment revises the legal description of the leased premises to reflect information in a new survey conducted by the lessee.
Resolution 10G is on the agenda. Communication 6G.
Memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution authorizing execution of a special event permit agreement for handwork plots between the City, the Redevelopment Authority, Arts Quest, and the Moon Bounce Guys LLC related to use of certain City and Redevelopment Authority property for a carnival ride and inflatable bounce attractions during Music Fest 2021.
Resolution 10H is on the agenda. Communication 6H.
Memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution authorizing records destruction by the Legal Bureau. The solicitor reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act and destruction of the records is permitted.
The resolution will be on the July 20th agenda. Reports. I have no reports this evening, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. President. Administrative order number 20, I hereby reappoint Joe Coyne, 1057 Powder Mill Road, Bethlehem, to the City Planning Commission. This appointment is effective through June 2026.
The resolution to confirm is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. Point number two, we will be holding for most city employees, if not all city employees, a seminar coming up in the second week of July on implicit bias training. And members of the administration will be able to watch it or attend on their computers, but that will be something requiring everyone. Second, sometime maybe towards the end of the year, I would like to have the representatives from the World Heritage Commission give City Council a briefing, because we're moving into a very delicate stage right now where we have a very good chance of becoming the representative of the United States government that would be presented to World Heritage and UNESCO. And I would just like to have the Mr. Barnett, Caroline Dodges, Mowers brief City Council on exactly where we're at, because we could still go two, three, four years till we would actually get the nomination by World Heritage. So that's something I'll work with you, Mr. President, and Robert on. And then regarding the pools, this was a very challenging year for all the communities. Some communities, their pools did not open. Some communities are using they just have one pool, as Allentown has until Cedar Beach is repaired. Some other communities, if they have two pools, they go 1 week on, 1 week off. Last year, pre-pandemic, we had approximately 80 people that were going to be lifeguards. We've worked very closely the last few years with the school district getting people certified. This year, we've only had 35. It's all the many of the communities, basically, we've had this challenge of lifeguards. So this year, we had to open up. We opened up Memorial, Osco, and Clearview. But the goal was to try to open up West Side, and we were at one point where we thought we would only open up two pools, to be very honest with you, or go on a rotating basis. We even increased the hourly wage for the lifeguards. It's something definitely we're going to have to look at next year, but with the large number of people that were over at Memorial Pool for the first week, 2 weeks, we decided to do what many other communities have done: Bethlehem residents and pass holders. Now, some people may have a pass from outside the community, and that's fine. But from 12 to 1, it's for pass holders, and then 1 to 7 is for Bethlehem residents. And that's the policy that we implemented last week for all city pools, because we're at a point where some of the pools are all at max, Yasco included, Clearview, and needless to say, the max at Memorial is 450 people. So we've done what many other communities done, but we all share the same problem. We've had a very low demand for lifeguards this year, and some communities were giving bonuses, and they still had challenges. It's just not affecting lifeguards. We know it's affecting so many other industries too. But the goal was to open up at least four pools, because Stark is being repaired, but that just was impossible. and we're very lucky we got three pools open. But we've worked very closely the last few years with the school district getting people certified, but this year was a very, very challenging year. That's my report, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ordinances for final passage this evening. Ordinance 8A.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 145 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, Title Bethlehem, Human Relations Commission, Bill 18-2021, is sponsored by Mr. Reynolds and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Groen?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 1739 of the Codified Ordinances with respect to the timing of inspections and payment of fees. Bill 19-2021 is sponsored by Mr. Reynolds and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Groen?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. We have no new ordinances for consideration this evening. Moving to resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with McCarthy's Irish Pub for the Feast of Seven Fishes on July 24th and 25th. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Mr. Groen.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Groen?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Huey Engineering, Inc. for preparation of a wastewater treatment plant, control building space configuration conceptual plan. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Colliers Engineering and Design, Inc. for preparation of a GIS needs assessment and asset management plan. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Mr. Groen.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10D.
Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that during the period 12 p.m. Friday, August 6, 2021, through 11:59 on Sunday, August 15, 2021, and in connection with the 2021 Music Fest Festival, all violations of the provisions of Article 531, parking, and the subsections specified in the resolution shall carry the modified fines as specified in the resolution. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Chief, I was wondering if you'd be able to step up to the mic and give us a little information. This is something that comes across every year. Essentially, it is, for lack of a better way to put it, enhanced fines in order to help protect the residents that live in their neighborhoods and while still allowing parking on the public streets, encourage people to park legally and lawfully. So we had gone email a little bit about maybe some of the changes that you had recommended this year versus what we would have expected last year or in 2019.
So in prior years, the area was much more robust to take into account the busing areas, the parking that was located over in the Martin Towers lot, as well as the area off of Lynn Avenue. Being that Music Fest is moving that bus transportation location, I was able to bring up prior year special event parking boundaries in our city GIS system, and I felt that reevaluating the special event parking boundaries and trimming it up so it does not extend past, so south past East 4th Street, and then would not extend east of Hayes Street, would be a good course of action considering my 17 years here in the city where people park for music fests, and looking at some of the fines that residents who may have to park illegally because there is no parking would be subjected to, I thought was excessive. So I trimmed up the parking boundaries over on the south side as well as on the north side to not include that area of Martin Towers with the hopes of reevaluating next year. I spoke to the parking authority. Our main concern is that there is availability of parking for our residents. However, I don't want them to get penalized for some of the parking issues that we encounter on a day-to-day basis because of the density of the city, let alone considering the thousands of people that come in on any given night for Music Fest. So if you look at the map that was included in the proposal, on the north side, again, very similar to prior years, from the Lehigh River up 8th Avenue, and then going eastbound to Mincy Trail and then up to Elizabeth Avenue. Those areas are similar to prior years. And then again on the south side, going off of Wyandotte Street, up Broadhead to East 4th Street, but instead of extending past East 4th and going up to Packer Avenue and going all the way past St. Michael's Cemetery and out towards the area of South Terrace of Linfield, that parking boundary has been trimmed down. So it'll go down to East 4th Street, past the casino, and then the Mincy Trail Bridge.
Understood. And other than what is in front of us, since we are on the topic of Music Fest, which is fast approaching, is there anything else unique to this year's preparation compared to previous years? I know it's a big challenge for the police department, and the amount of roster duty that is asked of them is quite significant. It's kind of all hands on deck for a couple weeks. I would imagine that the turnout for this year's Music Fest will be pretty significant, as I'm thinking a lot of people are anxious to get back out into the real world. So I wasn't sure if there's anything else the police department's doing in preparation for that.
Just working very closely with our federal, state, and other local agencies, not only police departments, but the fire department, and working with the various business owners as well. We're hoping that people come out and they come out to celebrate and enjoy Music Fest safely and responsibly.
Great.
It's a great opportunity for our business owners and for Arts Quest to bring people in and bring business back into the city.
Great. Thank you, Chief. Is there any other discussion or questions or comments from members of council? Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, I just want to make a general parking comment here, not so much about this, but just connected to this situation, is that I think one thing that we've all heard a lot about is the need for as much communication as possible between the city, the police department, the parking authority, when we have things going on or any type of changes in our neighborhoods. So, like, I know that, you know, I get contacted when there's somebody working on a sewer main, and then you have, it's two-hour parking, so then the people that have the permits need to move to a different block, but it's a two-hour parking block. All those type of logistical issues are huge, like, things to people. And this is not directed towards you, just Chief Cott, but just as a city, as far as our communication with the parking authority, anytime we have something that changes the what's going on in the neighborhood, like, I think there's a better way for us to be able to communicate that. And I think that that has to be a priority for the city going forward. Because those type of situations where you come home and they're working on your sewer main or whatever, and you have your permit, and you got to park three blocks away, and it's 2-hour parking, and you didn't know that was happening. And obviously some of those things are emergencies and stuff like that. But, you know, I've just had enough of those communications between all the different entities to know that there's a better way for us to do that. And like I said, this is not just about what's going on here as far as Music Fest, but anytime we have a change in parking in our neighborhoods, like, people get frustrated partly because it's the way it's communicated or not communicated. And, you know, I was involved with a parking sewer situation over on the north side, and there hadn't been much communication. So I just think in general, this is an area that, you know, we can do a better job of. Thank you, Mr. Waldron.
And Chief, while I have you, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about fireworks and what the police department is doing and what is being asked of the police department and some of the limitations within the law that is currently you're facing in your department.
It's extremely frustrating, and it's something that municipalities are facing across the state right now. With the passage of that act back in 2017, and I know that the various fire associations throughout the state of Pennsylvania have actively worked to try to get that law repealed, and to no avail, through no fault of their own. So I believe, as Mr. Grubb said earlier, we are stuck with that law. We are actively out trying to enforce the law. It is extremely difficult. On the 4th of July, we had 50 calls queued, meaning waiting to be dispatched because of individuals calling in about fireworks throughout the city, not only on, you know, west side, north side, east side, the south side. And it's extremely difficult when the officers are out there trying to enforce it and it's occurring on multiple blocks. So just the sheer volume of those calls, in addition to other emergency calls that they're trying to respond to and handle to provide service to the residents of the community, it's extremely frustrating when individuals aren't considerate to their neighbors and to others, the pet owners, individuals suffering from PTSD, individuals with autism. So it is something that we are trying our best to work on, but it's extremely difficult to enforce if you don't actually have the person that is lighting off the firework, or if we're able to go out and actually cite them. The penalties right now for violating our consumer fireworks law is a summary offense, so it is the lowest grading for a criminal offense in the state of Pennsylvania, and it's also a $100 fine, which is, to many people who are spending thousands of dollars on these fireworks, a mere slap on the wrist.
Understood. Well, I don't think we're going to get an answer or solution on the state level anytime soon, but I do think it's something that council may be willing to revisit about what we can do for our specific ordinance within the city to help protect the neighborhoods, whether that's trying to limit the amount of time that fireworks are permitted, as well as maybe having an escalating fine system for some of those repeat offenders. And that might be something that carries through multiple years, potentially. So we're definitely open to having that conversation when the dust settles, kind of, if you will, maybe after Music Fest. We want to have a public safety committee meeting to talk about what that solution is, because this is going to be an ongoing problem that's going to keep occurring year after year. And if we can do anything to help support you, I think we're definitely open to that idea. And just to give a general idea, so when you said you had 50 calls in the queue for dispatch, how many patrol vehicles are out on rotation at that time trying to handle all those calls?
So on any given day, we would have roughly between 10 to 15 patrol vehicles out trying to handle all the calls. And when I say in the queue, it's waiting to get dispatched. And at one point, we had to actually group some of the firework calls together because they were so close together in various blocks of the city.
Yeah. It's understandably impossible to keep up with all of them. I mean, you can walk outside. If it weren't pouring rain right now, I'm sure there'd be fireworks going off in just about every neighborhood of the city. So thanks for that. Are there any other questions or comments from members of council on that issue? Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, I think what it comes down to, we've had this conversation before, is what are you going to do that actually works? So, like, I mean, I know I've talked before about the idea of even the people that sell the fireworks, the couple of different places, like, you could even require them to, you could pass some type of, you know, registration type deal, some type of license type deal. Like, if you're selling fireworks, you need to write down that, like, you know, J. William Reynolds bought, not that I did, I don't have any fireworks, but, you know, you have to go in there and say that you bought them and things like that. But the enforcement here is as difficult as you can possibly find. Because you go out to these neighborhoods, and a lot of times they're doing it in the street, so you don't even know what house it's at. You have to see them actually do it. And then, as we know, with any time we cite somebody, you have to go through the process. That person has to show up to court, you can find them, like, actually getting them to pay the fine, it just becomes a very, very difficult thing to do. And I can only imagine how frustrating it is for the department, because, like, we've heard in the past that you respond to hundreds of calls here, and you get out there and the person says that person did it, but you can't just say that person did it. You need evidence and things like that. So, like, I'm not exactly sure what the answer is, but it's, you know, and the other thing is about July 4th, there's so many people that come in that don't live in the city of Bethlehem to visit families. So, like, sometimes you see people in your neighborhood that you never see before because they're visiting somebody else, and then they come, and then it's just, it becomes a very difficult thing for us to enforce. But, you know, I don't know what it is we have to do, but I do think tightening up the hours, that's something we've talked about before, you know, because if you tighten up the hours and then you catch people when it's a little bit non-July 4th-ish as far as how many people, you might be able to get the word out a little bit. But, you know, it's a difficult thing. But as always, every year, we are open to suggestions. Like, if you come to us and say, like, these are the three things that we think you can do to tighten up the ordinance, people are going to say yes, because it's another thing that, like, everywhere you go, there are blocks in Bethlehem where it sounds like a war zone. And, you know, I just can't, nobody, and as we've said, 150 feet from any structure, which should eliminate them in about 98% of the city of Bethlehem. And I think that's one place we can start, by one of those, like, color-coded maps that we should be able to use our GIS system for, to be able to say, you know, like, these are the only possible areas that you could set one off in, even between these hours, which I think is just a starting point. I know that other communities do that, so.
Yeah, I look forward to working with all of you. I think it's a great idea. It absolutely needs to be relooked at and reworked.
All right. Ms. Crimson
Smith. Thank you, Chief Cott. I know this is just, I really feel for you, and for everyone, it's such a big issue, but I think it's a great idea that President Waldron said that we have a committee meeting and discuss it, but I'm really worried about the present moment issue, because I think even between now and Music Fest, we're still going to see this happening, and it's adversely affecting. I'm wondering if maybe we can see, I don't know if this is a possibility, but administratively, I know some boroughs, I think Fountain Hill for one, they have policemen in unmarked vehicles, you know, and can we do something like overtime, or have policemen that maybe are retired, or do something in unmarked vehicles to try to attack this issue now, you know, in a better way? Because I'm sure, you know, they see the policemen coming, and, you know, they see the police car and they're running. So I'm just wondering if that's something that we can look at. Again, I have no idea, but anything we can do, I think we really need to do as soon as possible.
It's extremely difficult, and there's multifaceted responses to it. And it is something that we've been open to, but again, it also depends on the call volume and priorities, and actually finding the person that is utilizing, discharging that firework. So,
right.
But it is something that we are very much aware of. I hear the residents that are calling in, emailing, and that we're actively working on and addressing.
Oh, I'm sure of that, and I thank you for it. I guess I'm just trying to think of any other ideas. But again, as President Walter said, we're here. Anything that we can do helping legislatively or whatever it takes, we're all certainly willing to do whatever it takes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
The clerk, please call the roll on Resolution 10D.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Grone?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the mayor and the controller, under such other city officials as deemed appropriate, are hereby authorized to execute a lease agreement for public property with ECTB Holdings LLC for the use of 3 upper Saucon fields for baseball. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Groan?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Walden?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the mayor and the controller, under such other city officials as deemed appropriate, are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Touchstone Theater in connection with the First Friday concert on August 6, 2021 in Parham Park. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Mr. Reynolds?
Yes, I obviously will be voting for this tonight, but I just wanted to state that I know Mr. Jordan is here. Like, Touchstone is one of those organizations that constantly is doing events and things like that. And I know we've discussed this before, is the general process to be able to have an event in the city of Bethlehem. And, you know, one of the things that I think is one of the kind of implicit conversations that is occurring about development on the south side is where our place is for certain types of cultural celebrations and, you know, meeting places and people coming together to have the important conversations or to celebrate together as neighborhoods. And Touchstone is one of those places that does just such a fantastic job of this, you know, week after week, month after month, year after year. So, you know, and this is an example of how, as a city and how City Hall can make this process as easy as possible. Always want to do it responsibly, always want to follow the law, but there are things we can do that make it easier and easier for organizations to be able to be creative and do the things to celebrate the culture of our city, because every moment that someone is spending in City Hall trying to get a permit, trying to walk through this process, and I appreciate Mr. Jordan sitting here for 2 hours, but I know there's places he'd rather be, is like that's a minute that's being taken away from the organizing, being taken away from the time and the energy. So, you know, going forward, and not just with Touchstone, but with other similar type of organizations, I think we need to do everything we can when we trust them, when they have a track record of success, of making that permitting process and the use of public land as easy as possible, to be able to, you know, take away some of that red tape so they can have as many events as possible and to celebrate our city and the culture. Thank you.
Thank you. Clerk, please call the roll.
I'm sorry,
Mr. Brown.
Thank you, President Waldron. I agree with what Councilman Reynolds said, but I actually have a question. We have, and this is something that I talked about it last year when Mount Airy Neighborhood Association was putting together the Rose Garden, the farmers market, and wanting to have alcohol, and they were required to have police presence in order to have beer or wine at the Rose Garden. And that's something that I again and again keep on thinking, why do we have to do that? You know, another example of another community organization, nonprofit, organizing an amazing event, and we have going to require them to pay for police officer overtime. They don't have the money to do that. They're volunteers. They're putting everything out of the goodness of their heart, and so is Touchstone. I know that the permit is included in here that they have to hire a police officer. And, you know, again, a lot of the events that they've been doing, especially through this pandemic as we were moving out, were free of charge, open to the community and free of charge. And we had a great event. Actually, Chief Cott was there at the Latin block party, and there was alcohol, and people were dancing and having fun, and everybody went home. Actually, I was probably the last one leaving the place. You know, it was very family-oriented, very nice. There were no fights. There were all Latinos, most of us. And it was a great event without the need of hiring a police officer. So I am hoping that we get to do that more often, that they get to continue to do the great organizing and community development work that they have been doing, not just Touchstone again, but like Mount Airy Neighborhood Association, without needing to hire a police officer. I think that they have demonstrated that they are capable of organizing and putting together beautiful events at a very without that need and then without the expense, because again, that's a lot of money that they have to come up with. I don't see the need. I really don't. I think it's completely nonsense. So I really hope that they get to have their event like they have done before, and that they are not required to pay for a police officer. I mean, I see it as, and I know that Chief Cott has talked about this many times before, as another opportunity for officers to be driving around, those that are in that area, to stop by and say hello and shake hands, you know, to make it another community police opportunity, to be, you know, talking, and I mean, like that time that we were there, people loved having the officers there, loved meeting the chief, you know, and they left and we continued dancing and drinking, and it was all okay. So I really hope that the administration think about this and I am rear advocated for not just the Touchstone but the Rose Garden, as they are doing beautiful organizing work that the city administration doesn't have to worry about, and they're doing it really well. So that's my plea here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. The clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Waldron.
Mr. Waldron.
I'm sorry, Mr. Callahan.
Hey,
did you want to make a comment?
Mr. Is there a reason why, is it an insurance requirement from the city, or is it an ordinance from the city that is requiring these smaller organizations to hire a police officer if there's alcohol provided?
We have provisions in our use permits that provide for the potential for the requirement of police. It's up to the city and the police chief and the department to decide whether the particular event requires police attendance. Then if police should be there, that's when they're charged. I don't think there's an automatic thou shalt. It's a matter of the city does, really responding to your very concern, the city does exercise that discretion as to whether it's needed or not needed.
Right.
So we don't have some absolute rule that says thou shalt.
I totally understand that, as far as just protecting the city's assets and from any liability. But I think if I totally understand having police officers at Music Fest and Celtic Fest, and Harvest Fest and some of the bigger festivals. But I think some of these smaller, very small community organizations that are just running really on a very, very tight budget. I think it's probably something that the mayor and possibly you and Chief Cott could get together and just possibly waive the need to have a police officer on duty for the full time to save them some money. And I'm sure it's possible that we could have one or two police officers, maybe once every 15 minutes as they're doing their routes around the city. Maybe they just drive by, and just give it a quick glance and make sure everything's going on, is legit and, it's safe. We can help out these small organizations that have some festivals and try to raise some money. So that's just a thought, and I think that's, it's something that could possibly definitely be done. I've seen, the groups and the organizations over at the Rose Garden and a few other places, and I'm telling you, we're not dealing with a rowdy crowd. It's a very mellow crowd. It's usually an older crowd. And, so I'd be in favor of asking the mayor, Chief Cott, if they could possibly speak in the future and just look at the size of these small festivals and make a determination whether or not, prior history, if there's prior history there, maybe we make them do it. But if there's not, and they've been safe and quiet without any interactions or disruptions, I think it's something that we should probably let them do. So that's just my thought. Thank you.
Just let me comment. I don't make the call on whether police shall be there or not, but I believe that's already the way they handle it. The police make an assessment whether the event requires police, whether it's appropriate or not. Can that discussion take place with the police as to whether maybe they could go easier on some of these events? Sure. that can happen. I'm sure the chief can take a look at that. I just also wanted to address the question as to Ms. Negron had a question about the Rose Garden event and alcohol and things like that. I personally took care of that question. I talked to the vendor, and I would touch to the vendor. We had an excellent discussion. I explained everything to the vendor. He was perfectly satisfied after that. So we do those things. That was taken care of. Okay?
Thank you.
Then the other thing I wanted to correct was the impression as to why we have these requirements of insurance in the permits. I understand it is one of the considerations in terms of protecting the city and the city's assets. That's actually not the primary reason for the insurance in these permits. Primary reason for the insurance in these permits is actually to protect the public. We have an experience here in the city where people have been injured at these festival events, and they're injured principally through the actions of some of the vendors. We don't have a lot of experience with that, but we do have some experience. That's the primary concern here, is people being injured, whether it be through the food, or people getting rowdy as a result of booze at a particular event. We need to make sure that these vendors are properly insured, because if a particular patron, a visitor, is injured, and they're entitled to compensation, they're going after the vendor. We want to make sure the vendor is insured. It's not the city's responsibility, it's the vendor's responsibility. We want to make sure, for the benefit of that injured member of the public, they have a remedy and a source for recovery and compensation if it's appropriate. That's the primary reason why we have those requirements for insurance. It's not about, well, does the city need it? Does the city need to protect us? That's actually a secondary consideration. Even as important as that is, it's secondary to protecting the public. So I want to make sure that there's not a continued misrepresentation, that we have some misunderstanding, that we have some unnecessary requirement or over-insured requirement for our vendors and festival hosts. I think that correction or that clarification is appropriate, given where I think it was raised this evening. So I think it's important you understand that.
No, I totally understand it, and if you took that, as me trying to say that we're over, protecting the public or whatever, or making it more stringent, I wasn't trying to do that in any way, and I was just trying to state that, and I do know that all the vendors at all these festivals have to have insurance, otherwise they don't get the permit from the city, correct?
Generally, that's true. Yeah.
So,
and the other thing, let me add that it's not a very particularly burdensome requirement. Vendors, some of them who are unfamiliar with the requirement, occasionally, and very rare, will have a reluctance, a resistance, or a complaint of some sort. If you go find out in the market what it costs to buy a special event liability insurance policy, you'll find it can cost $100-$200. We're not talking about excessive burden in most instances. And then in the other, the other side of that coin is we're dealing with large festival event hosts and large vendors who have all the required insurances in the first place. It's not an issue for them at all. So another issue is to, is it really an excessive burden at all that we impose any insurance requirement? Once you get in the marketplace and find out what it's all about, the answer is it is not.
No, I totally understand the need for the insurance. I just think that when it comes to hiring a full time police officer in order to attend the event for the whole duration of the event, especially when they're smaller events and they've had no history or prior history of any rowdiness or any public drunkenness or any type of violence or any type of problem. I would hope that the chief and I know Chief Todd new to this and really haven't had any festivals under her. Since she's been a chief because of COVID, but would the final decision come down to the chief of police, or would it come down to the mayor based on the chief's recommendation, or what?
Yeah, generally it's a discretion of the committee. We have an events committee that reviews these things, and the police are there, and they discuss with the event host the history of the event, what the expectations for the event are, and they make determinations as to what would be appropriate for the event itself. So that's typically how it happens. If circumstances change, the police can.
Is it a vote, or does it come to is there a vote on the committee, or does, I mean, who makes the final call on whether there's a police officer here?
Yeah, I'm not fully versed on exactly the mechanics of the internal operations of the committee.
We defer to the professionals. The police make the call. There is a representative from engineering that attends that looks at the engineering, if the right-of-way is needed. So there are different, at those meetings, a representative from each department that's needed to assess the event and what it is, and the police are going to evaluate the things we've been talking about, and we look to them for, you know, the idea of the security, what we think needs to be taken care of in forms of police coverage at a specific event. So yeah, there's human discretion involved in it, and most of these meetings, once they go on, the application is made, there's feedback, if there's questions, if we, you know, this kind of run up the pole, whether it be to the mayor, to the chief, or eventually to the mayor. That does happen from time to time on specific events. We also, I think, need to understand that of the 1,000 applications, 1,000 events that go, I think I got a list at one point last summer of the events that go on, 990 go really, really clean, no questions, everyone's happy, everyone walks out and signs, and the events go off. It's only a couple we hear about each year that we're talking about now, and we want them all, 100% of them, to go well. But for the most part, it's very well received. It runs very smoothly. I've attended a number of the meetings just as a bystander to see how they're running, and I'm always impressed the way that people are handled and handle themselves on both sides of the aisle as applications are reviewed.
Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to get to the like who's making the final decision. I mean, if the committee, if some people on the committee think there doesn't need to be a police officer there, and some people do, is it the chief of police's final call, or does that go to the mayor? I'm just trying to figure out who do we need to speak to try to help these organizations out. I mean, who's making the final call on whether, you know, they have to get police protection for the whole duration of the event?
Yeah, the police department representative from the police who's there that week at the meeting, who's sent by the chief, will make that call on site. We don't, it's not voted on by people from engineering on what they do for police. It's looked at as a whole, and each group, just like the police don't vote on the engineering and what rights of way are needed, each looks to their area of expertise. Sometimes they take it with them and they come back at the next meeting for the solution, or they may need some time to go back and investigate on this particular case to get the answer. And then the applicant is informed what changes they need to make, do they need to do something, or what we need to do to accommodate so that event can happen the way the person envisions it and wants it to happen.
I'm just trying to figure out who's making the decision whether they need to be there. I mean, I hope it's not the police officer that's going to be on duty.
The mayor and the chief aren't there. There's a lot that goes on every day in the city. There's not the mayor and the chief sitting, if you imagine, sitting at these meetings. These are usually very, again, 99% of them are done. If there's an issue and a concern, it's run up the pole and it would get to the next roll up, whether it be captain, the mayor. But there aren't many, like, in community birthday party events that the mayor's going to sit there and make a decision on. It just doesn't need that or get right to that level.
No, I'm not talking about a birthday party. I'm talking about a community-sponsored event. I mean, we don't have birthday parties that come to us for votes, Mr. Evans.
What's...
I'm just trying to...
I'm making a point. I understand.
I'm just trying to figure out... I'm not trying to pick on anybody. I'm just trying to get a final answer to who makes the final decision. So these types of committees that are coming to us to vote on... I've never voted in 8 years on any birthday parties. Maybe on a street closure of like someone that had, you know, a block, cancer or something like that in the
block parties.
The event. I just want to figure out who does this. The Latin festivals and the Rose Garden festivals. Those types of events, which are below I say they're a little bit below the Celtic Fest and Music Fest, but a little bit higher on a level of, a little bit higher than a birthday party. I mean, who's making the decision for these groups whether they need to have a police officer there? Because this is not the first time that we've heard about this. I mean, we've heard it for about...
Mr. Callahan, I think the question has been asked and answered by Mr. Evans that the committee decides, and at this point, we're just running in circles and not getting anywhere.
I know. Mr. Walden, I asked a simple question.
And it was a simple answer. The committee decides.
So there's a vote by the committee.
That's what Mr. Evans said.
Is that true, Mr. Evans?
Each representative answers their part. Some events are, as you said, a street closure. In that case, the person that represents engineering, which is Anthony, is going to have a whole lot to say, and there's not a vote about that. Anthony will tell you what we require in order to close a street. The police, or the representative, is usually an experienced officer who's going to attend and make he or she needs to make the assessment. If police, the people agree to do it, we sign and we move. If there's a question, then that application is held until we get an answer from the next rank up with the police department was police coverage. Again, a lot of them go through, very, very, very few require police coverage. We're talking about 1,000 festivals, about the same, you know, couple, handful a year that we've talked about in the past couple of years. So there's very few cases that it comes to a point where it's not a real good conversation. The agreement comes, there's often compromise on what needs to be done to make the event happen successfully and have everyone happy. And everyone goes home happy.
All right, I'm trying to get a straight answer, so I'm just trying to. Is it possible if one of these organizers wants to appeal it, should they go to Chief Cott on it?
I think at that meeting that they're at, they can ask, and that officer would tell them the next step. I don't know if it's from the officer that attends to Chief Cott, or it would be the next officer that can get involved to help. Hopefully solve the concern. If you ever get one too, please feel free to reach out to Chief Cott that if there's something that needs some mediation with it. But again, I don't think there's as many as you may think, especially percentage wise, the number of events that occur in the year. Not the big ones, but again, we have a lot of small ones or mid-sized ones as we were talking about.
No, I'm just referring to the couple that come to us on a regular basis every year, like, you know, the Rose Garden ones and the Latin festival over there and the Touchstone one. So I appreciate everybody's attempt to answer. Thank you.
Thank you. The clerk, please call the roll on Resolution 10F.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. That's the 7-0. Resolution 10G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute a First Amendment to the City Tower Lease Agreement between the City of Bethlehem and Allentown SMSA Limited Partnership, DBA, Verizon Wireless, as it relates to the Rogers and Lewis Streets Tower site. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Walder?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10H.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and the Controller and such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute a special event permit agreement for handwork plots between the City, the Redevelopment Authority, Arts Quest, and the Moonbound Skies LLC in connection with use of certain City and Redevelopment Authority property for a carnival ride and inflatable bounce attractions during Music Fest 2021. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. We'll accept a motion in a second to consider resolutions 10I through 10K as a group.
So moved. Second.
And ask the clerk to call the roll of that motion.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Walder?
Aye. Passes 7-0. If the clerk would please read the resolutions.
Certificates of appropriateness under the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature and Bethlehem Ordinance are hereby granted for 321 Wyandotte Street to install a new louver in the upper east of Sayre Hall to provide ventilation air to the central air handling unit and install a new louver in the transom of the double doors in the basement of the Cathedral Church to provide ventilation to the sanctuary. 712 East 4th Street to secure a COA to add a vinyl decal on the front window. 125 through 127 West 4th Street to install window panels, repair bricks and windows, and install exterior lighting. The resolutions are sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Aye.
Mr. Groan.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Walder.
Aye. That's a 7-0. I guess that's it. Any new business? Oh, I'm sorry. Resolution 10L.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature and Bethlehem Ordinance is hereby granted for 317 through 327 South New Street to demolish four buildings while integrating the salvaged and rehabilitated facade of one existing building in order to construct a new multi-story mixed-use building. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Ms. Negron.
Any discussion from members of council? Mr. Plum?
Thank you, Mr. Rye. I have a couple questions for Ms. Carter, please.
Good evening.
Good evening, Ms. Carter. If you could please just walk us through, this is the same certificate of appropriateness that was before us a few meetings ago, and then that was postponed, correct?
Actually, this has been, can I just walk you through the timeline of
agencies? That's what worth.
So in January, the Historic Conservation Commission first saw this project. At its highest height, it was 129 feet. At that point, it had kind of a step look to it. So there was half of the building had a higher height to it, and then there was an outdoor patio. That was tabled at the HCC meeting in January. In February, that height was denied. In April, it was expected to be on the regular meeting and got moved to a special meeting in April. It came down to 104 feet at its highest height, and that includes the parapet, and that was denied. And so that denial is what came to you and was then pushed back. I think it was Ms. Negron who indicated there was another plan. And so in June, the plan that included the building at 88 at its shortest, the average height was essentially 90 feet, slightly below 90, like a couple inches. And so that is the plan that's in front of you. The roof is no longer that stepped roof. It is a flat roof with no outdoor amenities. But that height is the height that's in front of you now. It's the lowest height that's been seen by the community.
And then just for those following along potentially at home, this was approved by HCC by a 4-2 vote with one member abstaining, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. And then I know there was some discussion at the last meeting before it was pushed to tonight about the intention for the building. I think it may have come up, and I wasn't present in any of the HCC meetings myself. So just as a refresher, I appreciate whatever you can interject. The intention of the building, was there a discussion about, I know we've talked a lot about affordable housing over the months, and there's a committee meeting. The proposal, did the developer mention or include discussions about affordable housing, and can you share whatever they had shared in their potential plan?
I can. There's always been a conversation about inclusion of affordable in this project. And when we say affordable, we're talking 30% of household income based on HUD standards. And so the rental rate would not exceed the HUD extremely low or moderate rental rates. And so, again, that encompasses a 30% housing cost, not just rent, but rent, utilities, and things related to housing. So that's the cap. And so at 10%, and forgive me, I just want to consult my notes here on the number of units. I think we're looking at six. There are 53 two-bedroom units and 8 one-bedroom units.
That's 53 two-bedroom and 8 one-bedroom units?
That's correct.
Okay. And then the zoning as it reads for this parcel, that is where it reads they could go up to 150 feet, but the historic guidelines recommend remaining in scale with previously existing structures. Is that a correct way of putting it?
Yes.
Understood. And then there was earlier in the year discussion about amending the zoning to come down to 90 feet in the core of the downtown and then 60 feet in the periphery. That was just a discussion. Would that be, or a discussion about study that was done?
That's correct. We had saw some funding last year at this point through a certified local government grant through PHMC. This issue of conflict has been before us before, and so we wanted to work with a consultant in the community to really examine, you know, those development pressures, as we call them, on the Southside Historic Conservation District.
Thank you. And I appreciate just the background on where we are today and where we were before. Those were my only questions, Ms. Carner, that have just a couple general comments. You know, when we look at projects like this, I've said this before for other projects, you know, it's not a pendulum where it's either all the way over here in favor or all the way over here against a project. And this block, and a lot of it, I won't speak for other members of council, but I know we all spend various times on the South Side, whether it's for the wonderful job they're doing over there at the South Side Arts District with their First Friday events. And, I mean, on a personal note, I'll tell you, I spent a couple years of my childhood here. My dad and his uncle rented rooms for a couple years above the old Pat's newsstand, above what was the Welcome Inn. So I would spend evenings and weekends visiting with my father there. So when we talk about the new parking garage that's across the street, when we talk about the strip of land, when we talk about the new strip mall where the pharmacy is, I mean, we all have our own perspectives on what it looks like and things like that. And then incorporating what's before us today as we've had these conversations about affordable housing, and that's not what, you know, this is a certificate of appropriateness about the nature of it, but taking all these things into consideration, I know that density is what potentially helps drive affordable housing and things like that, and it's yeah, there's conflict there because you look at the need for where do we go. You only go up. There's not a lot of open lots in the city. We talked about that with Martin Tower, and Martin Tower is 50 plus acres. There's not, where's there 5 acres on the south side, unless you're talking about some of the old brownfields. So where do you go? And if we, there's concern, as we heard from some callers before, about going so high up and keeping it in with scale. And then part of me, someone had asked one time in conversation, well, if you don't want tall buildings there in the core of one of your two downtowns, where do you want the tall buildings? Do you want the tall buildings, in different parts of the city, if not right there in the downtown? But again, there's the historical guidelines to take into account. So that's just a couple different ways of looking at it, or the different things that I try to balance, because when we talk about the need for feet on the street or putting people there and not being too far out of scale, I know the developer had come down from 129 feet. Was that a realistic even number to start with? Maybe not. And he could have said, I'm going to start with 500 feet, and then anything would have been coming down and be considered a compromise to a degree. I am someone who, when I had heard about the 90 feet and then 60 feet as we went out guidelines, thought that was fair to a degree, but again, it's sort of out of scale with what is historically there. I know there's other buildings like the Housing Authority building at the top of the hill as you go up South New Street. I can't speak to what year that was constructed and if that fits the timeline, but there's definitely, I think, merit to the project, but I also think there's merit to what a lot of the callers had had tonight. So that's just a little bit of my perspective for what it's worth, and as we talk about the pros and cons of tonight before we call the vote. Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
Thank you. I'm going to try to provide kind of, I think it was Ms. Smith that talked about before, as far as like the framework of how we make decisions in as far as these issues are concerned. So I'm going to go through both some of my questions, what I think this is about, what it's not about, but hopefully in only a few minutes here, I will be able to kind of lay out, you know, where I kind of make my decisions from. I want to start with some questions for Ms. Carner, though. And some of the questions / criticisms from some of the callers were things that I wanted to kind of ask about, and one of them is that issue of air rights. I know this is not an issue that generally we have dealt with in the city of Bethlehem before, but is that something that the administration has started to look into, started to talk about, started to think about? And I don't know if some of that might be part of negotiation, but if you could kind of talk about that issue, because I do think that's a completely legitimate question.
Yeah, we are currently exploring the air rights issue, and so we have no information to present to you this evening, but it is a topic that we know needs to be addressed. We have not had an example in the city that includes building over public, you know, the street like this one does with usable square footage. We have walkways over a couple of different streets or the Greenway, South New Street, mostly the parking garages, but those aren't spaces that we largely consider usable. They're not leased, you know, there's no revenue generated on those spaces. So this is unique for us. So we are negotiating. We did put the developer on notice that this is something that is a area that we need to resolve before we can move forward with the project.
And what's the kind of place in the timeline of the project that that type of is, does that happen before they pull the permits to build? When does that part of the
that's something that would be negotiated as part of the developer's agreement, and that comes after the approvals through you know, we can't issue the permits technically until the developer's agreement is signed, but that is part of that document.
Okay, thank you. And as I was reading through the certificate of appropriateness, they have to go back to the HCC, correct?
That's correct.
And what are they going back to the HCC for?
It's very common for large projects to go back to the HCC for all kinds of details, materials, even some of the design elements regarding the windows. There was a lot of support for this design. This design was well received by HCC members. They actually referred other projects to this design. This architect was responsive to some of the concerns or questions addressed by HCC members, but that never means that at this early stage that project is finalized. And so, you know, they may have to go back with the design of the windows, as I said, or the parapet specifics, materials. A lot of the details that come later will go back.
Yeah, so as it says here, consideration should focus on unifying upper-level facades with facades at the street level for a more cohesive design approach, as well as addressing such details as windows and door types and things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, they're going, but if whatever happens, if this moves forward, they go back to have those conversations as well, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
As far as the questions are concerned about some of the environmental standards, and one of the things that the Climate Action Plan points out is that the city internally should review our own standards for building codes and things like that. And one of the big questions that needs to be answered there is what exactly are we able to do versus what do we have to do by incentive? And this is one of those kind of, it might seem like bureaucratic, but it's a really big issue as far as this is concerned, because as we know, and affordable housing is one of these issues that we're not able to mandate affordable housing. We're not able to say, you know, Alicia developer, we're telling you, you need to build a certain amount of units. So like in this case, the developer is doing that voluntarily. But it's a legitimate question though, that as we internally take a look at what it is that we can do, what we can change for building codes and things like that, so does this project have to go before the Planning Commission eventually?
Yeah, it's a land development project. They did submit for land development. We have provided comments to them. Those comments are ongoing.
Yeah.
It's a back and forth with any large scale development project.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the things that came up in the Climate Action Plan process, which, you know, it took a while because, as we've talked about before, I won't go through the timeline about why it took a couple of years, but it took a while partly to be as comprehensive as it ended up. And one of the things that came up was what kind of environmental standards should new commercial buildings have to follow versus residential, say a household is changing out their HVAC system or whatever it might be. So I do think that if this project is going for the Planning Commission and we have not completely yet taken a look at our building standards and so on and so forth, and whenever it would go before the Planning Commission in the coming months, that it's completely legitimate for the Planning Department and the administration to push for, and a lot of developers and a lot of people that are building these buildings will do these things on their own because it makes environmental sense and it makes financial sense as well. But this is the type of thing, this has come up before, that even if there's things that at the end of the day someone doesn't end up putting in their building, we should be able to say as a city about why we're not necessarily pushing them to do that. Sometimes it has to do with the ground they're building on, sometimes it has to do with whatever. But I do think that that's a legitimate thing as well, is like if this project goes through and it goes to the Planning Commission, that the administration, in exchange for, you know, Ms. Heller or Ms. Carter, whoever, telling the Planning Commission that we think that this is a good project, to say like they are incorporating these environmental standards that are consistent with what's in our climate action plan. I think that's a valid criticism, maybe not the criticism of me, but I think that as far as the part of including this in the particular project, I think is something that's important. And the other thing that I think we need to make sure, and I'm sure other council people will talk about this, is that that study that was undertaken on the south side, like the administration undertook that on the south side partly because of this ongoing issue between what the HCC standards are and what the zoning allows. And we did a particular study, and now the study has come back with recommendations about how high buildings should be, and in this area in that study it suggested 90 feet and this one is slightly below that and the other. So whatever the administration decides, whatever, you know, whether or not you think those are zoning changes we should undertake or not, I think a lot of people are waiting for that answer. I think a lot of people, and if there's reasons why not to bring forward those proposed changes, that is completely your right, and so on and so forth. But a lot of people, I think, are waiting for that. And it's for the same reason why you guys undertook in the first place, is because there's a lot of outstanding questions, and that's just not, that doesn't just fall on you, Ms. Carter, it's on the administration. But that's a conversation that I think people are looking to have, because if those design standards become consistent, then there are less of these conversations where someone comes in and they see the zoning and they think, even if the HC says no, or even if the city says no, I can legally challenge it because the zoning allows it. And we thankfully have not had a lot of those conversations, but this is absolutely something that needs to be a priority for us going forward to be able to do that. And so then, just to kind of transition, and I don't want to, and I will just give me one or two more minutes here, is like, I think one of the things that comes up here that I've said before is like the amount of time, energy, conversation that we have about these public projects that are coming forward, as far as the perception of what matters to some people, whether or not it's affordable housing or the cultural value of the South Side, or, you know, even things like digital divide, access to healthy food, those are all issues that we work on a regular basis. And if you take a look at the housing overlay district that we passed last year, our discussion about celebrating the cultural contributions of historically underrepresented citizens and groups in the South Side, even the conversation about AHARTS, all of these issues are equity, are ones that we work on. But they often get buried by these development conversations. And whether or not people, you know, however you feel about that, that is a real thing. And moving forward in every aspect of the South Side and every aspect of the city, we need to be respectful of that. Is that the time and the energy that we spend on these conversations to people, even if it's not something that's intentional, is something that gives off a certain kind of where the particular priorities are. And that's something that I think we all need to do. If you take a look at what this conversation is about, as far as this building, which, as Mr. Colon said, did pass the HCC 4-2, and you talk about affordable housing, and he is doing that voluntarily, is, you know, probably in a couple months when we have our conversation about what we're going to do with our recovery funds from Washington, we're going to talk about the significant investment that we're making in affordable housing. I don't believe that when you look at this, and if this building is 88 feet or 75 feet or 77 feet or 72 feet, that it can necessarily be a microcosm about whether or not we are serious about the issue of affordable housing. This person is including some affordable housing units, but there's a lot more to be done on a lot larger scale. And the city needs to undertake that, and we're going to undertake that. If you take a look at what the HCC said, and I went back and I listened to all of these different meetings, is that it's not the contributing buildings that people necessarily were like, we need to save these. They wanted to include the facade. There were some questions about the design, but the thing that came up over and over again was the height of the building, and whether or not it was consistent with the parking garage across the street, whether or not it was consistent with the building a third and new, which I also, you know, I think there are completely legitimate criticisms of at times when we look at some of these projects, and to say, you know, and you know, the framework of how you make these decisions is that it is when this building opens that on the first floor there are going to be the small businesses that are going to be in the building on day one. Ms. Carter, I believe that's correct.
Yes,
that's correct, right? So it's completely legitimate criticism when someone asks about why has nothing happened on the first floor, third and new. Like, that is a problem. And that is a problem for all of us. And it's completely legitimate when someone says, are we going to make sure that this building is filled? So when I came down as far as how I make the decision, I look at that. Are we increasing the housing supply? I've been around long enough to know when you talk to small businesses, they do want more people in our downtown. We have seen a lot of small businesses that have failed in the south side that have moved. We have some that have been successful. But by and large, the one thing that comes down over and over again is they want more people living in and around their downtown. When you take a look at the design of the building, when you take a look at the HCC supporting this, and when you take a look at that, we have the air rights issue, we have the administration study which we need to come forward, we have these legitimate questions about environmental standards that need to be answered at the Planning Commission, or as an administration, we shouldn't support this. I'm comfortable with this project going forward as far as what I believe that it's going to bring to the South Side. And quite honestly, I think it's a better looking building than it's what's across the street. I think that the HCC approved the third new building, and they've come back and they've talked about how they thought it was too tall of a building. But this building, as far as the architecture and the design and the fact that they've been back there 3 or 4 times, I think that it is a better looking building than what is across the street. And for those reasons, I will be supporting this tonight. Thank you, Mr. Wald.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Dr. Benware.
Thank you. Ms. Carner, I did want to ask you a question, and I just had a couple comments. My question is, has anyone done a study? And you know, I've mentioned this before, this is not new, that this is a very huge concern to me about the idea that the highest part of this building is in the northwest corner, right where it lands on the Greenway, right? And so it is south of the Greenway. That means during half the year when the sun sits low on the horizon, that shadow is going to be cast permanently on the Greenway. Has anyone done a study about the degree of shadow that's going to be cast on the Greenway by this building at this height?
Not a formal study. You know, certainly no engineer has been hired to take a look at it. We have had people go out. We've sat out there. There is tree canopy that shades that section of the Greenway. Most of the time.
Which is very different than a building shadow.
I'm not arguing, we're talking shadows. And so other than that kind of look at the Greenway, no. We have not hired a professional, nor has, to my knowledge, nor has the developer of the project.
Is this a consideration for the administration in terms of the support of this building, that there's going to be permanent shadow at the head of the Greenway?
When you say is it a consideration, has that influenced the mayor's support for the project? I defer to him.
Concern you that there's going to be permanent shadow cast at the very start of the Greenway?
We have not had a discussion about that.
I think that's an important consideration. It's a huge planning and design consideration whenever building approvals come up. So I just wanted to talk a little bit. Thank you, Ms. Carner. I appreciate your input. When this proposal for the draft zoning change study came to the Community and Economic Development Committee meeting, I was very on guard, admittedly, about it because I could not understand where the onus of this request came from. In my mind, we have an underlying zoning of 150 feet, but it is clear that the Historic Conservation District is an overlay district, and it should, the way it's supposed to work, trump the considerations of the underlying zoning. And so I felt that this was like almost potentially an inappropriate study because it was coming clearly from the need for developers to build taller. And if we already have a functional HCC, it was really stymieing me why we were even asking this question. However, I wanted to learn more, so I called up this guy at the State Historic Conservation Commission, Corey, and he was so generous with his time, and he really taught me a lot about why there's value in reconciling these two things. It's because of what actually happened. If we have developers seeing that 150-foot underlying zoning, not only is there potential, as Mr. Reynolds mentioned, for lawsuits, which none of us like, but I think really the greater concern is that someone somehow will find a way around an HCC that doesn't want to comply with those higher zoning heights. So right now the HCC is governed by contextuality, like it has to fit with the other things that are there, not including the new building on the corner of 3rd and New. because I think everybody recognizes that as a mistake in terms of bulk and height. But if you don't reconcile that underlying discrepancy and there is an economic push from the administration to get these buildings built, which there is by the mayor's underlying support of this building, then what's going to happen is the HCC is going to get gutted. And that's what happened. The mayor did not renew Beth Starbuck to the HCC, who's been a volunteer there for 21 years. And not only was her appointment not renewed, but she wasn't told until after we voted on her replacement, which I was, honestly, I was mortified by that. I think our citizen volunteers deserve a lot more than that. But mostly what it taught me was there is value in giving the HCC something incredibly firm to stand on, and that is finding clear zoning heights that the HCC can live with, that the administration can live with, that the developer can live with. It's threading a needle, but it doesn't mean it can't be done. So when I hear the words draft zoning proposal that, what is the name of the group that did it? Urban Research and Development did. I hear the words draft. That means we can modify it. We can say, are these enormous boundaries just covering the central business district? Is that really appropriate? Maybe 90 foot's only appropriate on the north side of 3rd Street, right across from the building we just approved. Maybe everywhere else it's 60 feet. Maybe the 60 foot guidelines in the CL district can come down a little bit. Maybe we can work and find a way to get that zoning passed so that the HCC can say, here is exactly our hard and fast limit on height. Don't even bother bringing in a project underneath it, because that's what the underlying zoning says, and that's what we're going to follow. I think there's a path forward here. And to Mr. Reynolds' point, I think it needs to be done quickly. And I think that we should not approve any buildings until any buildings in the Central Business District and the CL District until we get this very, very important fact hammered out. Let's give our HCC back its structure, its credibility, its expertise by giving them fundamental zoning to stand on. So to me, this is really preemptive to approve this building before we hammer out all the details of what we want our downtown to look like. It does mean accommodating both the need to have development, that some of these sites are underutilized and are ripe for development, and development can be a really good thing if done appropriately. And I don't feel that this building is being done appropriately. I don't feel that a building that casts permanent shadow on the Greenway should be approved. I think that buildings that are potentially going to cast shadow on the Greenway need to come down in height so that they minimize that impact on our public parks that belong to everybody. I also want to just mention that I've gotten numbers of letters from people on the south side opposed to this. I've not gotten one in support of it. And so while there's been always this kind of same 10 people has been brought up before about the people who weigh in and talk about they don't want to support a certain project or not, this is not the same 10 people. This is a broad cross-section of people in Bethlehem, North Bethlehem, and predominantly South Bethlehem who do not want this to go forward. And I think it is irresponsible of us not to listen to them. I also just wanted to say one little thing about historic development. I grew up in a historic city, Savannah, Georgia, and they went about their saving their historic buildings slightly differently, but there was one thing that happened. They allowed, in the middle, I don't know if you know Savannah Squares, there was this beautiful city market. It was a historic market, like Reading Market, like Faneuil Hall in Boston. And city council allowed it to be torn down and a parking garage built in its place. And it was just this huge scar on Savannah. And it was something that they learned from and vowed that they were never going to let happen again. And SCAD came in and changed everything by repurposing historic buildings and by holding firm and fast and not allowing out-of-scale development. Savannah saved itself. And I see that same vision for Bethlehem, and I really implore the rest of council to take a break from this fast-paced push. These developers are not going to go away. They're not. They know that we're going to approve something. And if we can give them something stable and solid to build upon, to give HCC back its expertise and its structure, I think we can really find a path forward here where we can build great things for this city. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wart. Any other comments?
Mrs. Carter, I have a couple simple questions. Do you have any idea how many affordable housing units currently exist in the buildings that are going to be demolished or taken over by this project?
There's been reference to the rooming house that had been above the pub. That's been closed for a number of years, so it's a vacant building.
So there's really no other rental units that are going to be taken away from this project that you're aware of?
I don't believe there is, but I don't want to mislead you to think I'm 100% sure, but I do know that the one that's frequently referenced, which is the rooming house, did close down a number of years ago.
And then there's also like the old newsstand that there were some apartments above there, I believe.
The newsstand is one story, I believe. Pets? Isn't that the one story? And then, yeah, it was the You're Welcome In. That had the house.
Okay. Yeah. And do we have any idea, because I did attend the ACC meeting, but I didn't hear any specifics on what the cost of the rentals will be given the market rentals versus the affordable units. Did the developer
of that information on the market rate units yet? It's all been geared towards, the conversation we've been having is geared towards keeping the rates on the affordable units below the HUD requirements or the HUD standards.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I just have a few comments. I'll try to keep it brief, but I might not be able to suppress my Irishness tonight. And as you know, Mrs. Carter and I and many other people have been involved in an affordable housing task force. And one of the things we did talk about and developers mentioned is using density as a bonus, as an incentive. And other areas have done that. And I think it is definitely something to look at for affordable housing. But my concern with this project is I feel that it's not in the best interest of the city to use density bonuses and have such large-scale buildings in the historic area. I think that we need to look at outside of the downtown historic area for that. A couple things I felt were important coming from the HCC, the two people who did vote against this, they emphasized that it doesn't comply with the Secretary of the Interior standards, whereby it will not be, the new development will not be compatible with the historic size and scale. And the other thing is the negative effect on the Greenway. One thing that concerns me is infrastructure. I think that's a problem that we have all over our country, and I'm so glad that hopefully we will have a positive, successful infrastructure bill. But I think that we have done too much development and we have not balanced that with infrastructure. And my concern is we're going to have 61 new units. That could be 61 new cars plus some with visitors, or if there's two people in a unit. And that intersection at 3rd and New is a very busy intersection. I mean, I know if I'm coming east on 3rd Street, you're just literally stopped for blocks and blocks. And I'm really concerned what this development is going to do to add to that traffic. I really appreciate everybody's point of view, and I can understand where everyone's coming from to some extent on this proposal, and I think it is very tough because we do want development, we need development. We sometimes, you know, land space is an issue when we need to go up. But when I was at the ACC meeting and I saw the pictures of the buildings that are going to be preserved versus a new building, it was very significant, and it just does not look right at all. I think it's very significant in the difference between the buildings, especially the height. I was able to go a couple weeks ago and visit my dear friends in Old Town, historic Old Town Alexandria, and I was given a tour of all the different housing developments, and I was really blown away by it. In Old Town, they are consistent. They do not go high. They do 4 stories, 5 stories maximum within historic Old Town. What's developing there now is what they call New Town Alexandria, where they're doing development outside the historic area and they're doing high rises. But I also was fascinated, and it's really based on history, where there, because they were like the first ports during the George Washington days, that they really value their workforce, and they haven't kicked their workforce out of the area, in the historic area. They have, even within one corner of the city, they can have high-end luxury apartments, affordable units for the workforce and middle income, and low income apartments, all within the same area. And aside from the aging of the buildings and certainly the design, all the areas are beautiful, and you can tell that the residents all take pride in where they're living. And from a psychological and a sociological perspective, it makes me think, because that was my undergrad and graduate degrees in, that I think that really says something, because the citizens, the residents, are getting the message that their income and status does not matter. They are all valued, and they are guaranteed housing within this old, beautiful historic area of Old Town, Virginia, Alexandria. I think that, again, I know we can say we're not Old Town, but I think that we have many similarities in our historic area to Old Town Alexandria. I think it's commendable. I think that they're a fine example of economic success that is coupled with preservation of the historic heritage. And while I think we have been there and we can continue to be there, I think it's a fine balance. We need smart development. And I'm going to vote no, because as much as I commend the developers for saying they're going to voluntarily do affordable housing, I'm not sure that getting 6 units of affordable housing, and we don't even know what the rental is going to be on it, if it's truly going to be affordable, I don't think that benefit outweighs the risk to this development. I think we have a gem of a city, I've said it before, and I think it's critical that we preserve our historic heritage, because that's what we're all about, and economically that's why people love to come to Bethlehem, because of historic Bethlehem both on the north and the south side. And I think that we can be the historic area that Old Town Alexandria continues to be, and they're very successful economically. We are there and we can continue to be there if we do smart development. So for that reason, I will vote no. Thank you.
Ms. Negro.
Thank you, President Waldron. So I, you know, I one thing that makes me really sad about this project is the fact that Chef Palomino decided to start with a really high number in terms of feet, 129 feet, and then not waiting all the way to the end to present the project at 90 or a little bit under that, because I think that the project is really good. I really appreciate it. The fact that it has affordable housing, I mean, I've been talking about affordable housing for the last 4 or 5 years. Every building that we keep on building during the last 4 years, 5 years, 8 years, has been luxury apartments. And especially in the South Side, you know, it's been exhausted. And I just got really excited when I saw the word affordable. Even if it's just for a few apartments, it's better than what we have had, none. So I really love the concept of having the first floor, having different restaurants, and, you know, Chef Palomino, well, he's a chef, he's not really a developer, so food is what he has in his mind all the time, and having restaurants and the opportunities for different kinds of cuisine, which I really appreciate that fact. So I think that, you know, just for the piece of being able, and again, I know that Councilman Reynolds mentioned it before, you know, we cannot force developers or, you know, to start building affordable housing. I wish we could, you know, I wish we could just change, you know, so to give incentives so that they can, or, you know, or allowing changes as long as it's affordable housing. You know, it's really sudden to brag and talk about thousands of job creation when the jobs that are being created are $15 an hour, and that means people that are working on those warehouses for $15 an hour cannot afford the rent, cannot pay the rent in here. It's a shame. And I've been talking about this forever. So just at the first piece of finding affordable and getting that out of his choice, nobody told him to, I think that was, to me, also very admirable. So I will be supporting this. And the fact that the HCC, you know, I know that when it was in front of us last time, it was taller, and the HCC did not approve it. Once they saw the new drawing that had pretty much the same that they approved across the street for two buildings, which I voted against it. You know, now it's like, you know, that's, and I'm glad that there was a mention of Article 1714. I said that 7 years ago, 5 years ago. You know, why do we create the article? Why do we create the HCC if we are not going to follow? But we kept on doing it. So at this point, it's like, you know, we are going to keep the buildings at the same height. Hopefully that revision will get through, so we have 90 and 60s or whatever will be farther away. to make that then the standard for these to keep on moving forward. But I am glad to hear that someone is coming to town and willing to have include affordable housing in their new construction. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a historic day today. I'm in agreement total with Mr. Reynolds and Councilwoman Olga McGrone. The thing for me, and I always try to look at these projects, and I've said this, you know, for the 8 years I've been on, I always try to look at projects, whether is it good for the surrounding area, and is it good for the, the greater good of Bethlehem. And that's why, that's how I try to weigh everything. So, I appreciate all the callers that called in tonight, but I think Dr. Ward had referred to them as the same 10 people, and I've heard that the comment before also, not just casting it to her. But, it is what I call a vocal minority. We have basically every time we have a development project over here, we have Mr. Cornish, Mr. Alex, Ms. Holland, Mr. Shire, Ms. Smith. It's the same people that are just fighting the same, the same types of product. And I appreciate their comments and I understand where they're coming from. But, we as a council also have a much greater scope that we have to consider, as a city as a whole and not just one little particular area. For years, the north side was getting all the attention and everybody on the south side was always saying, hey, when are you going to start having development over here? When are you going to spend money over here? And we've done, I don't think there's been any area of the city that has had more attention paid to it and more of an investment than the south side. And I know the north side right now, we had a caller, that called in, about the west side. The west side is probably the most neglected area of the city. I mean, if you go over to the west side park right now, I had pictures of garbage sent to me a few days ago. There was garbage all over the place. The fences broke. The pool's water is just, disgusting looking. I mean, it's like we just abandoned the park. And, the West Side doesn't get much. I mean, they really don't. So, I think over the years, we've all done, many mayors and many administrations and many councils have tried to do their best to bring the South Side back. I had a conversation with an individual over there that everybody knows over there. He's been in business for 55 years. He grew up on Haight Street. And I've asked him over and over again, have you ever seen the South Side better than this today? I mean, when was this time that this the South Side was this glorious place that that everybody loved, living in? And he said, Brian, it's never been better. Is it perfect? No, but it's never been better. And I think my final decision, it came down to the zoning for this property when he bought it, and it's still 150 feet. He's coming in a little under 90, which I think is commendable. I know he came in at 129. He could have came in at 150, but he didn't. He came in at 129. He lowered it to 104. He got denied. Now it's down to 90. And I think that is something that we can all live with. I also think that, if you decide to live in an urban core, in a middle of a central business district, you've got to expect buildings of 9-10 feet. I don't think that it's fair to the rest of the city to think that you can live in an urban core area, a central business district, and not have any buildings over 60 feet or over 5 stories tall. I just don't think it's, I don't think you're being reasonable. I said this at the last meeting. I live literally right next to, 20 yards off the historic district, right on Main Street, about 20 yards from Brewworks. I live literally right next to a 10 and 11 story built on low income housing. I am their closest neighbor, 20 feet off the property. So the Northside Historic District has many buildings that are over, or that are 10 stories tall, and so does the Southside already. The Rooney buildings, I think 12 stories, the Litzenberger house is at 10 stories, which is already in the historic district. The Historic Conservation ACC voted in favor of this. And I think the kicker for me was the same, and I than it was for Councilwoman Negron. You know, everybody talks about affordable housing, but, you know, here's a guy who came in here and said, hey, I'm going to put 10% of affordable, he's putting six units in. And we had an expert, maybe about a month and a half ago, who came in, who runs these nonprofits, and he said, hey, I can't compete right now with the price, the housing prices right now to put in affordable housing. And here we have an opportunity to put in six units. That, in my eyes, that's worth almost $1 million. You know, a nonprofit, for them to come in and put in six units, you probably have to spend about $1 million. And that's something, if we don't vote for this tonight, you're not gonna see six more units added for affordable housing in the city. You have to have height and density. It's the only way you're gonna have it in the city of Bethlehem. Nobody wants to live out, I mean, if you don't want to live next to buildings over 60 feet tall, then I would suggest that you move out to the townships, because that's where you will get that type of livelihood. You're not going to, you know, when you decide to live in an urban core, in a central business, you are part of a community. You are, you're living here to be a part of something. And height in buildings in a central business district in the urban core is to be expected. You can't not expect it. And I apologize if you don't agree with me on that, but that's my thought. So I will be supporting this tonight, basically over the affordable housing, the 10% affordable housing that he is going to be installing. And I just want to thank everybody for calling in tonight and giving us their comments. But I did want to add one thing. As far as the tree canopy or the shadow, that building is going to be on the south side of the walkway. The sun starts peeking down not only under the tree canopy, but before it gets underneath the tree canopy, it's the south side mountains over there. So that mountain starts blocking the shade of that building way before there's a shadow being presented over the walkway. I think this was the same argument that we heard, that there was going to be a 10-foot shadow when we were talking about the bridge going from the Benner building to the New Street parking garage. And no one's ever complained about, you know, the 10 feet of shade on a mile and a half long walkway. So I think that's really a moot point, and it's something that is being used to scare people, and I don't think it's an issue at all. So I'll be supporting it tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. I'm also going to be voting in support of the building. I'm happy to see that number of feet come in under 90, and if it were up to me, I think that would be the new high watermark of what the height should be within the central business district on the south side. I think this is exactly the kind of development that the city should be looking for. The option of having affordable housing in our downtown, I think, is great, and I think it creates a precedent moving forward where, working with other developers, we can point to this project and say, this is what you should be bringing to the table. And to have a great looking building that is going to put more feet on the street, as well as have the first floor commercial space up and running on day one, I think for me is a slam dunk, and this is a great project that I look forward to supporting this evening. Are there any other comments from members of council on the resolution? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Nay.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 5-2. New business, Mr. Reynolds and Dr. Van Wert?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I know Ms. Fernandez has spoken about Westside Pool, and I understand all of the, and I've had many conversations with Mr. Evans about this particular issue. So I will not go around, but I can tell you that next year it will certainly be a priority from day one, as far as everybody's concerned, making sure it gets open. Because we've had different versions of this conversation for several years now, and I know Ms. Kwiatek, I mean, I remember having a conversation with her 4 or 5 years ago as far as, like, it's not just being open or being open for hours, it's being open consistently. It's like a business. If it's not open at a certain, and like I said, I know all of the things that we have done this year that are legitimate as far as the costs are concerned, as far as getting lifeguards and so on and so forth. I can't tell you any of that stuff right now is wrong, other than just saying that it's got to be a priority for everybody to be open for next year. So, thank you.
I too wanted to address Ms. Fernandez. I thought your comments were spot on. I encourage you to keep coming and educating council about what you see over there in all of our community pools. I had grave concerns when we decided to put all our eggs into Memorial Pool about the condition of our other community pools, especially the fact that little kids who live over on the west side, it's not an easy bike ride to get over to the pool, and if they do get there and 450 season pass holders got in the first hours, they're not going to be let in anyways. So I feel that you spoke very well about some of the real economic realities of our kids and how they can actually access a pool. One of the times that we discuss how we're going to be budgeting things is during budget season. Nobody ever comes. They're boring as heck. But boy, if you could come and give that type of speech about how we spend our money and where we put it, it really has impact. And I thank you for coming and spending all this time, 4 hours? No, 3 hours with us tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for sitting wondering. I actually want to say thank you to the mayor for making the change. I know that you probably had hundreds of phone calls, I'm sure. And I know that I can only imagine what it is like to try to figure it out, the timing and the appropriate place to put the resources, having a shortage. But I also hesitated when we were talking about spending 300 some million dollars in the one pool. And, you know, exactly what I thought it will happen, it did. So less and less people, you know, everybody's gonna go to the destination pool. And of course it gets more crowded. And with the season passes, you know, again, we're talking about, you know, people making $15 an hour, they cannot afford to buy season pass as much as they wanted to. You know, again, it's the issue of how can they afford. And so changing, I really think that changing that 12 to 1 for season pass holders to walk in, and then anybody else be able to get in after one, it looks a whole lot better in my eyes. More individuals that couldn't afford, and maybe that one day that they wanted to go to the pool, you know, that they can afford to buy the ticket to go to the pool. You know, when you think about a family, you know, yeah, it's $5, $6, $8, you know, then you have five kids and you're making $15 an hour, there's no way you can go to the pool, period. You know, and for some reason, you know, that's always stays lingering. I also want to thank you for the changes that you made, putting monies for down payments for house for first-time home buyers through Community Action. That is a great program, and I'm so glad. You know, I'm just glad that you know, you were thinking out of the box and thinking of the individuals in our city that were able to get those great jobs that you brought to the city for $15 an hour and cannot afford to pay rent or to do some activities that we have in our city. So thank you. Thank you for keeping that in mind and for making such a quick change. I know it was like one day, and then I'm like, wait a minute, you know, good. It was quick, and I'm hoping that more individuals get to enjoy the pool. Thank you. Thank you, President Walter.
I just wanted to give a huge thanks and kudos to Mary Talese and the Mount Airy Neighborhood Association, Mike Alcall, all the city employees and administration for the great Rose Garden 90th anniversary celebration. I know it was a lot of hard work by the volunteers and the MANA and the city to get the Rose Garden looking as good as it does. And I think the festival is just fabulous. It was a great way to celebrate such a beautiful gem we have in our city. So thank you.
Mr. Callahan.
I'll be brief. I just wanted to share with everybody
I mentioned a few minutes ago about some photos I received from some West Side residents about the West Side Park, and I hope that we are not neglecting that park just because the pool is shut down, but I'll be very brief. I just want to go over some pictures here real quick, and if you get a chance, you can poke your head up at the screen here. But this is that's the West Side Park area right now. There's, if you can see here, there's garbage all on the wall. The grass hasn't been cut over there. Here's the swimming pool. You know, if we're going to have it emptied and not use it, I would hope that we could drain it and get that disgusting water out of there. Here's the fences in the park. They're all mangled, broken, unattached. Here's our basketball courts, grass growing out of the cracks. And another picture of the grass and the cracks of the basketball court. I'm not sure how, like, you know, the kids are going to play in this, but here's the last picture I'll show. Again, garbage all over the place, and cracks all over the basketball court. So, you know, I would hope that we could take care of that West Side Park, even though that pool is closed down, and possibly we can have some people go over there and clean it up once in a while. So, that's it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. And just for reference, those pictures of the blacktop are not a basketball court. Currently, there is a basketball court up higher up in the park, I think is in good shape. That lower one is kind of an abandoned asphalt area with the mural that's there now. I know I spend some time in that park with my family. It's usually in pretty good shape, but clearly it does need some attention.
Thank you.
Yeah. This meeting is adjourned.